annexing territory that belongs to another NATO country.
In other news, drivers over 70 to face compulsory eyesight tests and exposed the fake admiral.
As I say, it's a remarkable commemoration.
Addressing crowds back in 2019, plus menopause and prostate conditions prioritised for a new online hospital service with the NHS. But how exactly will it work? Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, President Trump has reiterated that he is in charge of Venezuela, ruling out a snap election in the next 30 days. Mr. Trump has said that he must fix Venezuela first, but has insisted the US is not at war with the country. Ousted leader Nicolas Maduro was seized by US forces on Saturday. He's since pleaded not guilty to drug charges in New York. The former Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, has told LBC the move could backfire against the US president.
Public opinion in the USA, for all the bombast of Trump, the tariffs are not popular. The unemployment is not popular. The poverty is not popular. The lack of health care is not popular. And the idea that he's going to lead them into foreign wars that are out of control, he could find that he becomes a very unpopular president very, very quickly.
France will host a meeting of Ukraine's allies later to discuss security guarantees for Kyiv under any peace deal agreed with Russia. Sir Keir Starmer is also expected to join the discussions in Paris. Talks will also likely include Donald Trump's military action in Venezuela and his threats to annex Greenland. The NHS has confirmed that its new online hospital will be rolled out in England next year. The service will allow patients to speak to specialists by video through an app and is aimed at reducing waiting lists. NHS England says it'll cover conditions including menopause symptoms, prostate problems and eyesight issues. The celebrity chef Tom Kerridge has told LBC that business rate hikes are unsustainable. A re-evaluation means many firms, including pubs, bars and restaurants, are facing much higher bills from April. Mr. Kerridge says his venues will see rises of more than 100%.
For my Butcher's Tap and Grill, which is a very small little pub boozer in the middle of Marlow, does burgers, fries, sport on the telly. It's not Michelin star. It's not generating huge revenues. The rates at the minute are £50,000. A year. That's gone up to £124,000 a year.
Sir Keir Starmer has told LBC yesterday that he is looking at further support for the sector. And mandatory eye tests for drivers over the age of 70 may be introduced as part of new road safety measures. It's understood that a public consultation on the measure will be outlined tomorrow. Ministers are looking to reduce deaths and serious injuries on Britain's roads by 65% by 2035. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,004 after closing at 53 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most today. Patchy snow showers continuing for central and northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle, enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vermondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, while stocks last. Terms apply, see lidl.co.uk/lptv. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 26.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after seven. Tuesday, January the 6th. The red lights are flashing on the dashboards of many European countries. As it would appear, Donald Trump looks eyes up the possibility of taking over Greenland. I'll be asking you whether you would support that, or that really is one military excursion too far for Donald Trump. In other news, we've mentioned briefly this idea of a new online hospital. Ian Eardley is the National Clinical Director for Elective Care at NHS England, and he told LBC...
If I give you the analogy of online banking, most of us a few years ago would never dream of doing a lot of banking through the app over the phone, but now most of us do that all of the time.
The Health Secretary will be joining us to explain more on that and indeed address other key health issues. In other news...
Is it a well-needed tipple of good news for pubs? Sir Keir Starmer says to me he's looking at more support for hospitality over business rates increases. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive.
All at sea, the fake admiral fined £500 after admitting wearing fake military uniform and even addressing one remembrance event. We're asking a psychiatrist, why is it that someone would want to dress up and pretend to be a senior member of the armed forces? And in other news...
I've lost 5 stone after injecting Manjaro. However, I'm now £2,500 in debt. I'm Emma Donaldson, and I'll be talking to Nick about this later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Many of you were and are still outraged by President Trump's action, or the action that he authorised with those executive orders on the weekend and the taking of Nicolas Maduro. So where would you be if his ambitions to extend to Greenland? Well, it's front page news in some of your newspapers today, and also the fact that he's been warned that any attempt to seize Greenland would spell the end of NATO. It is also being reported that it is thought there's about a 30% chance he will go for Greenland, 3 out of 10 chance. Let's catch up with details over the last 24 hours, including, of course, those facts. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington Correspondent Report. Simon, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. The Maduros are spending another night at the notorious Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, with every indication now that it will be their new home, at least for another 3 months, and possibly much longer than that as they await trial. They were defiant in court yesterday, both of them pleading not guilty to all charges, the ousted Venezuelan president insisting he is still leader of his country, claiming he was kidnapped by the Americans and denying all the charges against him, as he called himself a decent man. But the Maduros weren't the only people displaying extraordinary defiance in New York City yesterday.
This is the Western Hemisphere. This is where we live.
That's the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Mike Waltz, with the most audacious claims any U.S. official has ever made at the Security Council.
We're not going to allow the Western Hemisphere to be used as a base of operation for our nation's adversaries and competitors and rivals of the United States.
And in case anybody didn't get the message, the State Department took to social media declaring, "This is our hemisphere, and President Trump will not allow our security to be threatened." For all the bluster, U.S. officials have still provided no legal justification for the military assault on Venezuela and the Maduro's abduction. And that's a real problem for the Prime Minister, as he says he is continuing to wait to hear one. Though he found it a little bit easier yesterday to draw a line in the ice in Greenland, also now directly threatened by the Americans. He told LBC's Natasha Clark.
Denmark is a close ally of the United Kingdom in Europe, and a close ally in NATO, and so it's very important we stand by our ally.
In Colombia, also on the American hit list, more defiance. In daring comments, President Gustavo Petro, accused by Trump of flooding America with cocaine, said, "Come and get me, coward. I'm waiting for you here." He does appear to be next on America's target list, with Cuba and even Mexico also under at least American rhetoric. Fire. How much of this will Republicans on Capitol Hill support?
This is an operation that did not require prior consent of Congress.
That's Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, aligning himself with Trump even before receiving a classified briefing last night.
They've done everything that they were supposed to do. This was an appropriate action, and we'll get a lot more detail inside, but they have been talking, all the administration officials have been talking to Senate and House members on a constant basis since this happened.
But Democrats are furious. Senator Andy Kim of New Jersey.
Congress never authorizes action. We were never told about it beforehand. We never authorized its use of force. It's simply flat out illegal.
The legality of the action is likely to be tested at least in the federal court in New York. It's clear, Nick, that the Maduros are going to argue they were kidnapped in an act of international terrorism by the U.S. when they are back in court for another hearing on March the 17th.
LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks reporting 7:09. Let's turn straight now to former Defence Secretary Conservative politician Sir Ben Wallace, who joins me now. Good to have you on, Sir Ben. And by the way, Happy New Year to you, sir. One newspaper columnist describes the operation on the weekend. Let's start with that, if we may, Sir Ben. Describes and praises its sheer brilliance and flawless execution. Would you agree with that? Morning.
From a purely military point of view, it was incredibly done. They planned it 7 months ago. They started the planning. I know that for a fact. So it's been a long in the making. It's clearly been an option put to the politicians. And if you want to admire a military operation on its loan, then yes, it's an extraordinarily good operation. I don't quite agree with the Secretary of War, who said only America could do it. A few other first-rate countries could do it, maybe not as neatly, maybe not with such zero casualty rates from the American side, but nevertheless, there are capabilities other countries could do. But this is an extraordinary operation, so, extremely successfully delivered, and from that point of view, from a military point of view, yes.
So that's your military hat, Sir Ben. Put your political hat on now as regards the operation on the weekend. Where do you stand on that?
I think overall we're in a very dangerous territory. In November last year, the United States published their national security strategy. And to be fair, it's on the front page or page two. Very, very clear is a shift away from an America that was based in the rules-based system in the post-war structures towards a sphere of influence position. It views the Western Hemisphere, and your commentator in Washington was very clear by all the statements from the State Department, from others, that that is now their view. And a hemisphere view of the world, e.g., we control the Western Hemisphere, it's our backyard, that's exactly the same as President Putin. That's not the same as how we function in Britain or Europe, or indeed, until now, NATO. But fundamentally, that is a big shift. And that's a worry, because Greenland is in the Western Hemisphere, which is Canada, America, South America, Central America, the Caribbean, and Greenland. And also worrying for us is Greenland basically straddles the Western Hemisphere and our area, the European area. And that means it's perfect for Putin to use as a vehicle to try and break NATO.
Was it a breach of international law in your view?
I'm not a lawyer. I certainly think the first half of rendering Mandura to America, it's not something I bothered about. To me, I was always frustrated by people like Lord Hermer, who used to sue me all the time, and indeed sued Jack Straw in the last Labour government for rendition. The Americans have a different view, which is it doesn't matter how you get to a trial. The fact is America should be able to go to a country that doesn't allow it to, e.g., you know, a non-compliant country like Syria, and get those ISIS bombers and bring them back for trial. I used to be forced to kill people rather than bring them back to trial, because my lawyers and the Lord Hermer likes would say, oh, no, you can't bring them against their will out of Syria for trial. They might be ISIS terrorists. And so the only option you have, you couldn't send in special forces, because that would be a detention. That would be a rendition. So that part I'm not so bothered about. What I'm really worried about is this whole sense of we're now going to run another sovereign state. You know, that's what Putin does. That's Putin's justification for invading Ukraine. It will be no doubt his justification for invading other parts of Europe or NATO if he should wish to. That's a very, very dangerous precedent. And that's the bit we should all worry about. And if you notice at the beginning of this exercise or this operation, the State Department started off being at strains to say this is a law-abiding, this is bringing a guy back for trial, this is not anything else. 24 hours later, it's running another country.
Let's talk a little bit about Greenland towards the end of our conversation, if we can, Sir Ben. What line should Sir Keir Starmer be taking about these rumblings, these threats of Trump moving on that country?
Well, certainly not the headless chicken, rather pathetic line we had for the first half of yesterday. I don't know if you remember, the junior ministers were out with the lines to take given to them by Number 10. They couldn't even say strongly they supported Denmark. They couldn't say on behalf of a prime minister. Now, I'm not off the same wing, and I don't agree with a lot of his statements, but this is a man who came to power based on I'm a human rights lawyer. Lord Hermer was the one who sued me and my predecessors all the time. Couldn't even say whether they thought it was a breach of international law. And he had to be, you know, it had to got out of him by your great correspondent, Natasha, that he supported Denmark. Denmark is part of NATO. It's an ally. Greenland has an American base on it, right? I mean, it's not like it's a non-compliant country. Venezuela had the IRGC from Iran active there. It had the Russian GRU active in it. It had the enemies of America sitting in it. Not in Greenland, yet somehow America's sphere of influence, well, the Trump White House, is growing. And I would totally agree with those reports that puts it at about 30% chance of the United States. You know, Corporal Vance went to visit it. If you remember the president, Corporal Vance, he went on a little jolly tour to Greenland.
Yes.
So I think they mean what they say.
Okay.
And it's time that we stood up, you know, to America about it. We don't have to pick a fight. We just have to be firm and clear.
Lastly, your former colleague, Sir Jeremy Hunt, told LBC last night he could actually see the end of NATO. If Trump were to move on Greenland, he could see that it could spell effectively the dismantling of NATO. Sir Ben?
I don't agree entirely with that. I think, of course, if America invaded a NATO country, you could see NATO without America, and that would leave a massive, massive hole that would need to be, should those remaining states agree to it, need to be filled with their assets and their forces. And America leaving NATO would account for about 65 to 70% of the forces, and they'd either just have to step up the plate. You know, one member leaves, but it would be a horrendous thing. Remember, NATO is really about our values rather than the individual tank battalions. It's really about we all are a common group of countries that agree in the same values. That's actually what Putin hates. That's what he hates about us. If America leaves, it leaves Europe much more vulnerable. We'll have to make up the military force if we can, and I'm sure we can, but it would take time. And in the meantime, Putin would have a free run.
Happy New Year, Sir Ben. Thanks, as ever, for your time. Yep, wish you a good one. Sir Ben Wallace, former Defence Secretary, telling us quite a gloomy projection there. The 30%, he sticks with that figure. OK, Greenland, and a military operation too far. We'll take your views on that. And what about possibly some good news?
We're talking to the sector, particularly hospitality and pubs, about what further support we can put in, whether that's licensing freedoms or other measures. We want to talk to the sector. I want to keep working with them to make sure we can work this through.
Cheers. Pubs to stay open, possibly until the early hours of the morning. Sir Keir Starmer speaking with my colleague, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Natasha has a full report after this. 7:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has ruled out a snap election in Venezuela, saying that he is in charge of the country. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to meet with European leaders later in Paris in the latest push to end the war in Ukraine. And mandatory eye tests for drivers over the age of 70 could be introduced as part of new road safety measures. LBC weather, staying very cold but dry for most. Patchy snow showers continuing for central northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains because of the overhead wire problems right near to Paddington Station. The Heathrow Express is only able to run every half an hour instead of every 15 minutes. Great Western Railway services are delayed between Paddington and Reading, and there are severe delays on the Elizabeth line as well. On the Underground, the Piccadilly line's just been suspended between Oakwood and Cockfosters, and there are severe delays on the Circle, Metropolitan and District lines, and then there are minor delays on the Bakerloo, Jubilee and Central lines. On the roads, there are queues on the M25 clockwise from Junction 3 at the M20 to 4 Orpington. That's all down to an accident and delays on the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section.
This is LBC.
Turkey tummy.
Fizzy reflux. Sprouts.
Gastric trouble can feel like the festive gift that keeps on giving. At the first sign of discomfort, think Pepto-Bismol.
When you have nausea,
heartburn.
Pepto-Bismol coats and soothes your stomach for effective five-symptom relief. Pepto-Bismol oral suspension contains bismuth subsalicylate. Always read the label.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on
prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on. What about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chaser's got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
Hiya, Kenny the hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 after 7 to Tony. You'll be the first caller in just a moment. The front pages you're waking up to, or of course some of you are going to bed to after putting in your shift. There's a sort of, virtually every front page picture is of Nicolas Maduro and his wife being led into, they're handcuffed with a whole almost platoon of DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, personnel escorting. That's the front page picture. There's different takes. The Daily Mail has the line, we're going with Greenland raid will finish NATO. Trump is warned. That's also the front page of the Metro. They ask, who's next? Other front pages really chronicling events, as I say, in the court. I'm a prisoner of war is the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Maduro says he's a prisoner of war. Denies all charges is the front page of the Guardian. And let's just pick out one other one, which is the Sun, doing what the Sun does best. Because they're featuring the fact that Ruben Amorim has been fired by Manchester United. They've worked out it'll cost around £30 million. And there's a picture of Mr. Amorim with his wife, is it? It's his wife on a stroll. And the headline is as follows, and this is why the Sun's. When your trophies are nil and you've cost 30 mil, that's Amorim. That is quite clever when you think about it. The LBC app goes with the Greenland story. Trump declares US wants Greenland. And let's take one other one at random from the front pages of the newspapers. Let's have a quick look. Sky News is running on, as part of its front page, the government plans new driving rules for over 70s. Is it me, or often the worst drivers I see on the roads are the younger drivers, particularly young men who've just passed their test and possibly are in their 20s, not blokes who are nudging 70, but that might just be me. We'll look at that story later in the show. Tony's in Barnet. Tony, thanks for hanging on the line. What should Sir Keir Starmer's position be now that there does appear to be a lot of sabre-rattling over Greenland? Good morning.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you, Nick.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, I'd have to say for foreign policy up until now, whilst Mr. Trump is blatantly mad in some areas. He's actually made a lot of sense, particularly in his first term, say with China, and recently with Iran and the rest. But I mean, Greenland is just a step too far. It really is.
Why is it a step? By the way, I'm not saying I don't agree with you, but why is it a step too far for you, Tony?
Well, it's the territory of a NATO sovereign member, and. You know, just even if he wants to adopt a regional approach to, to dominance, it's not really his territory.
No.
And if he's really worried about Russian and Chinese vessels, that he's actually gone on record to say, look, it's surrounded by these vessels, we're worried about the security of the US, then provide resource and defend it. Well, you know, he can do that from America. He doesn't need to do it.
Well, he can because the US is a partner of NATO. Is part of NATO. This
exactly.
is an extraordinary thing.
Exactly. And if you were to do that, is it the end of NATO? I mean, it will certainly reshape it.
Well, as one of my colleagues was reminding me, there's that expression that an attack on one member of NATO is an attack on all of them, and it's a NATO member attacking another NATO member. This is
exactly.
an extraordinary thing.
Exactly. And it would be without precedent, and it would just be plain crazy, frankly. If he wants to defend it, provide the resource, work with NATO, and get it secured if he thinks it's vulnerable at the moment.
Lastly, if you'll allow the United Kingdom is the second or third most important member of NATO, depending on the finance put in, whether it's the UK or whether it's France, what should Sir Keir Starmer be saying?
Sir Keir Starmer should be saying, privately as well as publicly. I mean, publicly, I think he's already gone on a record to say he stands with Denmark and Greenland as a sovereign territory. But, you know, they've got lines of communication to each other. And he should be laying it on the line to Trump to say, look, you know, you just need to pull back from this.
That's, of course, if Trump would listen. Tony, thanks for getting us started on this. It is, of course, over in the United States. They're saying this is now the Donroe Doctrine. This is based on the Monroe Doctrine, which goes back to the 1820s. This is the idea that the Western Hemisphere is effectively the sphere of influence solely for the United States, as put forward by Monroe then. Now he's calling it the Donroe Doctrine and a revisiting of that policy from the 1820s. Let's go to social media. Lynn in Devon. It's hilarious watching the snobbish British and European elite and media struggling to understand how America is thinking and behaving. They are stuck so far in the past. Add in their TDS, which is Trump Derangement Syndrome, and they don't stand a chance of catching up with the realities of what today's power politics really mean. Scott in West Hampstead, when the name of the US Department of Defense was changed to the Department of War a few months ago, I knew then that this was a signal for the emergence of saber-rattling and a more aggressive United States administration led by Donald Trump. We'll have more of your reactions in a moment. Just coming up on 7:25, and we've mentioned Sir Keir Starmer, but there's a different aspect I'll be exploring now with my colleague, Natasha Clark, because the Prime Minister's told her he's looking at further support for firms hit by higher business rates. Of course, two of which closed yesterday, and we'll be looking at that. Claire's Accessories is one of them. We're looking at that later in this hour. But this could include licensing laws for pubs. Here with all the details, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Natasha, good one. How was he yesterday, by the way?
He seemed more cheerful. He seemed a bit calmer. He seemed more ready to get stuck in than I've seen him in a while. So, you know, bring it on, I think, was his sort of attitude yesterday.
In gear, that's absolutely right. And what's he been telling you about licensing laws?
So,
can we go to the pub until 2 in the morning?
Oh, God, I hope so. could we be about to see another big climb down from the government over business rates? That was the hint from the Prime Minister to me yesterday. We've been hearing for months that many firms, bars, restaurants, pubs facing hugely higher bills from April. Now, that's because of COVID discounts on those business rates that are now coming to an end. But after a string of U-turns, including just before Christmas, on the farming tax, that inheritance tax that some farmers were going to pay, that obviously just a couple of days before Christmas came in, some Labour MPs now looking at what else they can sort of pressure the PM and the Chancellor to think again on. And one of those things is business rates. Here is the York MP, Rachel Maskell, speaking to LBC last week.
The business community have got many, many ideas of how that can be done in a fair and proportionate way, but certainly not one that puts such demands on businesses that traders are saying that their doors will not be able to sustain this increase.
And celebrity chef Tom Kerridge told LBC last night that he thinks business rate hikes are unsustainable.
I've got four spaces, four pubs, and all of them are going up at, pretty much over 100%. The packages that are helpful are only helpful for a short period of time. The end result is, for example, my Butcher's Tap and Grill, which is a very small little pub, boozer, in the middle of Marlow, does burgers, fries, sport on the telly. It's not Michelin star. It's not generating huge revenues. And if we weren't in there, it's the sort of pub that an owner landlord would have, live upstairs, come downstairs, work 70 hours a week, loving that kind of space. The rates at the minute are £50,000 a year. That's going up to £124,000 a year.
Shocking increases to some of these rates. And obviously some people looking at it, some businesses going, can we sustain this at all? However, a possible glimmer of hope on the horizon. Sir Keir Starmer told me yesterday he is looking at further support for the sector.
With business rates, obviously what's happened is there were reductions in place during COVID, which were always going to be unwound at some point. The overall rates are going to be lower, but I accept that because of reevaluation, that means that some will have their bills going up. We're putting in place transitional relief. We're talking to the sector, particularly hospitality and pubs, about what further support we can put in, whether that's licensing freedoms or other measures. We want to talk to the sector. I want to keep working with them to make sure we can work this through.
Now, what will that look like? I'm told the government is already looking at what the PM just talked about, a string of licensing changes, so extended opening pub hours on the cards, making it easier for venues to serve food outside, on pavements, hosting more live music. They say they want to put growth at the heart of local plans, which obviously, you hear this, Nick, you know, from people that
sorry,
basically,
I rolled my eyes,
you
I
did,
do apologize.
But people that move into Soho, right, and they go, you know, I don't want to be around all of these noisy bars and pubs, but if you write that into the planning laws, so that this is something something that's on the council's books, if you come to this, then they are going to basically face fewer legal challenges. If someone's going to call them up and say, you know, I've moved to Soho and I'm really upset that this pub is open till 3 in the morning, if they write that into the heart of these local plans, that gives the government a leg to stand on to say, absolutely, sorry, mate, you've moved to Soho, this is none of your business, and to stop some of these pubs from having to face legal challenges and sometimes shutting them down. Now, obviously, that's just one option on the cards for the government. I'm told that Peter Carr, the business secretary, having a string of meetings with the sector. He met yesterday with Tom Kerridge, the celebrity chef you just heard from. The Treasury, I'm told, particularly alive to this. One government source to me said, we're not stupid. We realise this looks really tough. We are looking at all the options. So could we be about to see another U-turn? I imagine we might see some change on this, Nick.
Yes. We're not stupid, is what you're saying. Let's just listen to that Tom Kerridge. It's called a clip, that little bit of what he told LBC. Just listen to those figures one last time.
I've got four spaces, four pubs, and all of them are going up at, pretty much over 100%. The packages that are helpful are only helpful for a short period of time. The end result is, for example, my Butcher's Tap and Grill, which is a very small little pub, boozer, in the middle of Marlow, does burgers, fries, sport on the telly. It's not Michelin star. It's not generating huge revenues. And if we weren't in there, it's the sort of pub that an owner landlord would have, live upstairs, come downstairs, work 70 hours a week, loving that kind of space. The rates at the minute are £50,000 a year. That's gone up to £124,000 a year.
I mean, that 50,000 to 150, that is the reality, isn't it? That concludes Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor report, and Tom Kerridge was speaking to my colleague Tom Swarbrick. We might return to that. But coming up after the news...
Thousands of high street jobs are on the line this morning as two major retailers are on the brink of collapse. I'm Christian May from City AM and I'll be discussing this story with Nick shortly.
And yesterday, Monday, the first real full day back at work was divorce day.
Couples splitting up later in life risk their incomes falling by over £7,500 in the year following their divorce, according to new research. I'm Neil Russell, partner and head of family at Seddon's GSC, and I'll be speaking to Nick later in the show.
Those stories and more after the 7:30 news. This is Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari. The headlines from Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says the US must nurse Venezuela back to health before an election can be held there. Mr. Trump says his vice president and defense secretary will help oversee America's involvement in Venezuela. So Keir Starmer is expected to meet with European leaders later in the latest push to end the war in Ukraine. Talks in Paris are also likely to include Donald Trump's military action in Venezuela and his threats to annex Greenland. And mandatory eye tests for drivers over the age of 70 may be introduced as part of new road safety measures. Ministers are looking to reduce deaths and serious injuries on Britain's roads by 65% by 2035. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most. Patchy snow showers will continue for central and northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
With Nicolas Maduro up before the judge in a New York courthouse, how many other world leaders should be sleeping fearfully at night? Colombia, Cuba, Greenland?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
MJ the Musical. The electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
Bye, Mum.
He didn't used to leave his room. Now we can't get him back in.
The kids keep me busy, but at least the dentist is sorted.
When this lot need help, there's always an expert waiting. Family mental health support.
Dental appointments.
All the kids covered for the price of one. That's why I'm with Bupa. Search Bupa Health Insurance to find out more. Only pay for the eldest child up to 20 years old. New Bupa by You customers only. Pre-existing conditions not covered. Terms and conditions apply.
Hiya, Kenny the hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself. Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices Quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, staying with threes, a 30% chance that Donald Trump will move on Greenland, a figure that was endorsed by former Foreign Secretary Sir Ben Wallace, and we'll return to your views on that possibility, what it would mean for NATO, what it means for Sir Keir Starmer, what he, as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, what message he needs to try and get across to Donald Trump, the Donroe Doctrine, as they're calling it in the US now, after the Monroe Doctrine, which stressed US influence in that Western Hemisphere. That was put together in the 1820s. Let's talk about Greenland now, though, and the impact on the city. Christian May is Editor-in-Chief at City AM, and you either have got out of your rural idyll, or you are stuck in a railway station waiting room because your background has changed. Good morning, Christian.
A railway station waiting. This is my new sitting room.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's very nice too. Why have you got timetables on the wall?
We have moved. I'm surrounded by boxes. You can't see it. We're kicking off the new year in a logistical nightmare. So I've positioned all these boxes of books. You can't see them. But look, you talk about green.
Are you going to keep that colour of your sitting room? It's a little bright, isn't it, from where I'm sitting?
I'm absolutely certain that the people we bought this lovely house from will be listening to the show, so they ought to know, no, we're right. Not keeping this colour.
Okay, on you all go, right? Christian.
We'll get you around for some interior decoration.
Paint it green.
Tips.
Talk about Greenland.
Talking of Greenland, my goodness. Well, look, defence stocks are absolutely popping, but they have been for some time, Nick. Of course, what's happened in Venezuela and Trump's rhetoric that totally undermines the principle of NATO is the latest sort of geopolitical kick up the backside for defence spending and the urgency of Western nations and European nations to develop their own sovereign defence capabilities. The winners, of course, have been defence stocks. In the US in particular, it was the oil giants that boomed on the back of what's happened in Venezuela. In London and other European capitals, it was the defence sector. London's main market closed above 10,000 points on Monday, the first time that it has closed over 10,000. It has hit it before and come down again during the day's trading. It closed above 10,000. Demand for defence stocks helped lift the FTSE 100. BAE Systems up 5%, Babcock up 4.6%. So you can join the dots there. It's a similar story across other European capitals. But as I say, this is just the latest part of a conversation that's been going on since Russia's invasion of Ukraine in particular, that has been lifting the defence sector, defence investment and the entire conversation around defence quite substantially.
About 15, 20 minutes ago, I went through the morning newspaper's front pages. I kept the City AM one back for obvious reasons, because you're the boss. Happy New Fear. Why such a gloomy headline, Christian?
Yeah, I have to say, I did think twice about this. I don't like to kick off the new year. This was our first print edition back after the break.
Sure.
I was hoping for a more optimistic turn of events, but the news is the news, as you well know, and we felt we ought to draw the link between what's happened in Venezuela and the latest survey by the big accounting firm Deloitte of finance directors and chief financial officers at major companies in the UK. They conducted their quarterly survey asking them what's keeping you up at night. They conducted this survey towards the end of December, so before the dramatic events in South America. And a sizable majority of bosses have said that it is the threat of conflict and war and geopolitical risks, which can include diplomatic rows, new rounds of tariffs and the impact on trade, economic growth and stability. The vast majority have said that's top of their list. That's followed by the UK's poor competitiveness and productivity levels, and lower down the list but still punchy, you've got concerns about energy prices and a bubble perhaps in certain financial assets. But without a doubt, it's geopolitical risks which are top of the risk agenda in the city going into 2026. That survey conducted before Donald Trump's raid on Nicolas Maduro, so I'm sure that it's even more acute now.
Equally gloomy, I fear, on the jobs front, around more than 2,000 jobs with some firms closing yesterday, Christian.
Yeah, we've talked about the story of Claire's accessories before, haven't we, Nick, because they've been going through the runner a little bit, along with the original factory shop, those outlet stores, both of which were taken on by Modella Capital, the investment firm, bought both of these retailers last year, but they have really struggled to make a go of it. There was some hope that around 1,000 jobs at Claire's would have been saved, but what's happened now is that the original factory shop has filed for administration in the High Court, and Claire's is lining up restructuring advisors to handle a possible second insolvency. In total, that's 2,000 jobs that could be at risk. You know, some businesses simply can't be saved. Sometimes you have to just concede that their time has come and gone. However, of course, it's sad for anybody affected. It's another blow to the high street. You were talking to Tom Kerridge about the hospitality sector that's battling under new taxes. Modella blamed for this particular set of retail woes a combination of very weak consumer confidence, highly adverse government fiscal policies, and, of course, continued increases in costs and inflation. So process is underway to see what can be salvaged from those two particular retailers.
But one company that powers through is Aldi, and I have to say, having shopped there this Christmas, their champagne is excellent value, as are their salt and vinegar star-shaped crisps, or whatever they're called, bar snacks. Very nice, too. What are their figures like, Christian?
All right, I'll invite you to my Aldi party when we redecorate this house, Nick. You can bring the champagne.
I will bring the champagne. It's very good value.
Aldi
only racked
up,
though, unfortunately. Anyway, do go on.
Oh, crikey. Yeah. All right, well, it'll just be you and me then. Aldi racked up record sales in Britain over the Christmas period as shoppers traded down, perhaps on where they would normally shop, but they did indulge in Aldi's premium brand offerings. They saw a 3% increase in sales to just over 1.7 billion year on year in the 4 weeks to Christmas Eve. That's been a really quite dramatic acceleration of their progress. Should be said that it's also seen at the other discount giant Lidl. They saw a 12% increase in people opting for their specially selected range. And I was just looking at a report out this morning. And I can't believe if this is just Aldi. It's not clear. It feels like it might be more nationwide. But I think it is just Aldi that customers bought roughly 56 million potatoes and 500,000 turkeys, plus your 6 bottles of champagne.
Quite a shopping list. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, in his new sitting room. Talk around the same time tomorrow. 7:40 is the time now. Let's get a couple of social media reactions to our conversation about Greenland. What should the position be by the United Kingdom if Donald Trump 30% chance does move on Greenland? Well, for William in York, good William of York, every European country needs to send a couple of battalions of troops to Greenland, and then Denmark can tell Trump, now invade, you'll lose a lot of troops doing so. It seems a European army wasn't such a bad idea after all, was it? John T says, wait until the midterm elections later this year. Trump is going to have a huge shock as all opinion polls point to a massive turn against Trump. Perhaps that's why he's being so disruptive now. And lastly, this comes in from Tony in Barnum, which he helpfully tells us is near Chichester. This is like the beginning of the Second World War. Czechoslovakia surrendered as long as Hitler didn't invade Poland. If Trump wants Greenland, he won't care what other NATO countries think, which is worrying. This is why he's supporting Putin. And China will also be looking at what the US is doing. More reactions on that to come. 7:41. Let's come back to domestic matters. And yesterday was, as it was the first day back to work for most of us, I will say again, I realise some of you worked through the Christmas and New Year period, and I'm very grateful that you kept all the machinery going and the hospitals and the buses and the trains and goodness knows what else, and I hope you got a break. But for many, it was the first day back. And sadly, for many, it was what's known as Divorce Day, because having endured, for some of you, Christmas with your husband or your wife, you decided, up with this, we will not put. But there was something I noticed reading the newspapers online over the Christmas period, which is that couples that you would think were in a fairly good place, properties, seven-figure property, seven-figure estate, as it's called, simply can't afford to divorce. And now some research or a report done by Legal & General finds that older divorcees also struggle to recover financially. Neil Russell is partner and head of family law at Seddon's GSC in London and regularly helps us with family law matters, joins us now. Neil, busy day yesterday. Morning.
Good morning, Nick. Busy because it was the first day back. But yes, there were more inquiries. But I have to say, and I think it perhaps has waned off slightly, Divorce Day has by some of us been described as a media term rather than a reality. But January is a reality in terms of the increased number of divorces.
And what about the change that I noticed? And I won't name them because they're not appropriate, but there are, unfortunately, there are some minor celebrity couples who look as though they're divorcing, and they've got property that's worth $1, $2, $2.5 million, and yet still they have financial struggles. Elaborate on that, Neil.
Many people, whether they're celebrities or not, live to the full extent of their income, and some of them beyond their income. And if you get divorced, that means, or you separate, that means you need two homes, not one. There's two lots of mortgages, there's two lots of council tax, two lots of utility costs, and everything doubles up. There's also the cost itself of divorce, which is certainly not insignificant. And it's difficult. People struggle with one household, they're going to struggle more with two households. And property values have been dipping, which means they're losing a lot of the equity in their properties at the moment. People, there are more people getting divorced quite often during the peak financial times when the economy is doing well, because people can afford to move on. When the economy is not doing well, it's not as easy to divorce. People need liquidity, so properties need to be sold. And if it's going to take a long while for the property to be sold, someone might say, well, let's wait. Let's see if the market picks up.
And so your advice in the situation, because the Legal and General report specifically mentions those over 50s, and of course then obviously your pension is up for grabs there. What would your advice be on that field, Neil?
Well, if you're in a desperately unhappy marriage, then you shouldn't stay in that desperately unhappy marriage. But for many people, they think the grass is greener, but their own lawn would be greener still if they watered their own lawn. But the problem with a pension is a finite sum. It's another, you know, very substantial asset within a matrimonial pot. And the starting point is that should be shared equally. But the income is there expected generally for one person. When you divide it by two, again, you're having to share it. And therefore, you know, those approaching or in retirement can't necessarily afford to share their retirement income.
Neil Russell, thank you. Partner and head of family law at Seddon's GSC in London. Have a happy new year. I sense we'll be talking again because you regularly help us with family law affairs. 7:45, coming up after the news, how men with prostate cancer symptoms and women suffering from menopause will be prioritised. You'll be hearing from the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting. But here is Ian Eardley. He's NHS England's National Clinical Director for Elective Care. He told LBC,
this is not an instead of a traditional face-to-face consultation. This is as well as. So the aim is to increase capacity. And so once it gets up and running, it will give us extra capacity to see more patients more quickly.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting says this is a revolution. How many times have you heard that in the NHS? He'll be on to explain more after this. 7:45, news headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has ruled out a snap election in Venezuela, saying that he is in charge of the country. Keir Starmer is expected to meet with European leaders later in Paris in the latest push to end the war in Ukraine. And it's been confirmed NHS England's new online hospital initiative will be rolled out next year. LBC weather, staying very cold but dry for most. Patchy snow showers for central and northern England. Sleet and snow for parts of western Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne, where big problems continue on the trains because of the overhead wire issues at Paddington Station. The Heathrow Express is only running every half an hour. Great Western Railway services are severely disrupted between Paddington and Reading, and Elizabeth Line services also severely disrupted. On the Underground, the Piccadilly Line can't run between Oakwood and Cockfosters. There are severe delays on the Metropolitan Line and minor delays on the Bakerloo, Central Circle, District and Jubilee lines. On the roads, still very slow on the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section. A car's broken down. And now there are problems in Harlesden. The High Street is closed eastbound from Station Road to Manor Park Road. And that's because of emergency repair works, so do expect delays.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Hear that? It's your big McDonald's hunger calling. Because the Big Arch is back, and this time it's here to stay. With juicy beef, cheddar cheese, and that Big Arch sauce. Hungry? You are now. Order delivery on the McDonald's app. Serve from 11 a.m. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability, price and participation may vary.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one-third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Everything dinner at Ocado. Save on sausages, tinned tomatoes and get a great price on garlic. Then splurge on the fancy pasta. The kind you know you're pronouncing wrong, which means it must be good. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Select lines only, geographical restrictions, minimum spend and charges apply. Offers end 27th of Jan. Terms and offer info at ocado.com/terms.
I didn't want to miss Run Club, so they helped me back on my feet.
I couldn't face the crowds. Now, I'm doing more of what I love.
When I found a lump, I thought the worst. But before I knew it, I got my results.
Fast physio.
Mental health support.
Quick cancer care.
That's why I'm with Bupa.
Search Bupa Health Insurance to find out more. Pre-existing conditions not covered. Terms and conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
11 minutes before 8, we're just waiting on the Health Secretary to come to our studio at Westminster, which allows us to go back to our conversation we were having about the position with the United States and Greenland and the warnings that are being expressed. Donald Trump warned that any attempt to seize Greenland would spell the end of NATO. We were speaking with the former British Defence Secretary, Sir Ben Wallace, who said perhaps not quite as gloomy as that, but it would have huge repercussions. And when you consider, as one of my colleagues reminded us, that doctrine or that maxim that an attack on one NATO country is attack on all, well, you'd have the extraordinary situation of one NATO member actually effectively invading another NATO member, if you'll allow that Greenland is a semi-autonomous country under Denmark, which has seen a fairly strange reaction. As I say, the Danish Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen, says the US threats against Greenland had to be taken seriously. She added, any attempt to seize would collapse the NATO alliance, as I said, which seems to be endorsed by some people here. Meanwhile, the ousted Venezuelan President Maduro pleaded not guilty to drug and terrorism charges in that court in New York. He says he's a prisoner of war. Meanwhile, his wife is demanding x-rays and medical treatment because she claims that she was quite badly injured in that assault by US Special Forces when they successfully seized her or abducted her and her husband, whichever word you prefer. We understand Sakir has yet to actually speak with President Trump 3 days after the raid. So although understandably here our conversation focuses on what the position of the United Kingdom should be, and obviously that it would be put forward by the Prime Minister, it would appear that this special relationship of which Sir Keir has boasted in the past, something as major as that, wouldn't you have thought by now, even if it was just a hi and bye, a hi, how you doing, what's the plans, right, bye, even if it's just a hi and bye, you might have had that? So the position that we like to think we're in, or is it that Trump just doesn't listen? Meanwhile, defence sources, and this was endorsed here on LBC by the former Defence Secretary, Sir Ben Wallace, says there's a 30% chance Trump would attempt to seize Greenland. And, of course, Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper signalled further tensions with the US, saying the UK did not recognise the interim Venezuelan regime led by Maduro's deputy. There is an argument, of course, that if this had resulted in some form of democracy, in some elections, then it would be a positive thing. But as you've already heard on the LBC News Bulletin, we now know that those elections will be delayed. So let's go to what you're saying on social media and elsewhere. Mike in Crawley, whatever he does, it is plain, America can no longer be considered a reliable ally or trading partner. The Trump administration has shown the rest of the world the US government has virtually no control over a megalomaniac. NATO will have to operate without the US. Fortunately for Europe, Vladimir Putin has been weakened by his losses in Ukraine, which may prevent him taking immediate advantage. MAGA America, as in Make America Great Again, MAGA America wants isolation. I think we should give it to them post-haste. Let's take another call on that. Johan is in Osset. Johan, you're here on this. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, Johan.
This is my first time calling, though. Good morning.
Well, a lot's been going on in the last few days, so what a great day to pick to call me. What do you make of either the weekend or possibly Greenland? Where do you want to start, Johan?
well, I want to start saying that I'm a British Venezuelan. I was born there. The whole context on what happened with America doing what it did during the weekend with Venezuela, it will never happen with Greenland. Never. Like, the whole context with Venezuela, Venezuela is a terrible regime. It was basically a drug cartel. Well, it is, it's still a drug cartel disguised as a government. So it's an entirely different approach. The whole thing of international law is just being used as an excuse to politicize something that is actually a good thing. Most of the Venezuelans around the world are very happy that something finally happened. We are content. It's a liberation of the country.
But do you think that happiness would extend to people in Greenland, though, Johan?
It will never happen to Greenland. It's just an unfounded concern. There are no, there is not an entire fleet of the U.S. Navy around Greenland. There is no a drug cartel running in Greenland. Like, Greenland, it's a decent country. It's not going to happen. It's just worse.
Okay. You say it's not going to happen. Lastly, there's a 3 in 10% chance it will happen. That's quite a high odds there, Johan.
No, it's not. It's not. Look, it's the same odds that we had as Venezuelans waiting for America to actually do something with Maduro for the last 20 years.
Okay. All right, I get the mood that you're saying. Thanks very much indeed, Johan. Have a safe drive, and thanks for being a first-timer. Be like Johan. Get it off your chest. Get it on the radio. First time, first class. Look forward to speaking to you again. 528. We're having problems getting hold of the health secretary. Let's go to other matters. And for many of you, it might have been one of the most extraordinary stories. The former private school teacher who spent 14 years pretending to be a war hero, Jonathan Carley, the fake admiral. This is a few years back, 2019.
As I say, it's a remarkable commemoration.
He studied at Oxford before teaching at some of the top schools in the country, including Eton. He was a regular fixture at commemorative events in his spotless Rear Admiral's uniform, complete with a ceremonial sword. But the 65-year-old has been exposed as an imposter after being pictured laying a wreath at the Remembrance Sunday service in Llandudno, North Wales, last year, with 12 glittering medals on his jacket. Naval veterans had already spotted his uniform was ill-fitting, with what are called online sleuths, later working out that no one alive had received all the honours he was pretending to have. He was arrested 40 miles away at his home, and when the police knocked on the door, he said, "I've been expecting you." He's been fined £500. But let's go to the makeup of this. Honey Lancaster James is a consultant psychologist and broadcaster, and joins me now. Okay, simple question, Honey. Why? Why would someone fake it to this level? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I mean, as you say, this is an extraordinary story. And anyone, I think, any veteran, anyone in the military would be able to spot, you know, the display of an incorrect set of medals, whatever, pretty easily, actually. So it is quite brazen. I think we have to be careful. Obviously, I haven't examined him. We don't know. But I think when we look at cases like this, where somebody masquerades in a particular role, or they take on an identity that is not their own to such a brazen extent like that, often what we're seeing is some sort of identity repair going on, some sort of identity-related wounds that they're trying to meet. Now, I know this gentleman, from reports I've read, apparently he said it was about trying to achieve a sense of belonging and affirmation. I would challenge that I'm not sure it would be just that, because if you want a sense of belonging, you join a choir, or you join a sports team, or you take part in something along with everyone else, and you reveal your true self. If you're not revealing your true self and who you really are, you actually can't really achieve a sense of belonging. You know that you're a fraud. You know that you're not part of it. So I would suspect that there's something more there. Now, dressing up in military gear is a particular type of kind of presenting yourself, because it's very instantaneous. You're not actually having to say anything to anyone to inhabit that role, because there's so much meaning in what you're wearing.
But honey, you've got to have some. You've got to have some front, literally, haven't you? Because you are fronting up the whole. Everyone is looking at you and any other senior military personnel by your side.
Yes, that's right. You have. And I think there's something unique that comes from wearing a military uniform where it sort of commands automatic respect given, you know, whatever you're wearing or whatever indicates your rank. People will respond to you instantaneously without questioning. They'll salute you or they'll act with reverence or whatever. So I wonder whether that's part of sort of how it came to be that it was to do with that particular type of fraud.
I will leave it there, honey, because I've got the opportunity to speak with the Health Secretary. Honey Lancaster-James, thank you, commenting on that story of the fake admiral who's been fined £500. 14 years he spent impersonating various senior military personnel. Something strange going on there. We're going to be late. In fact, we might not even do the 8 o'clock news, because I'm pleased to say we do now have the opportunity to speak with the Health Secretary. This is after he describes as revolutionary reforms that are ushered in certain areas of the NHS. Wes Streeting joins me now. Mr. Streeting, why use a word like revolutionary? We've heard so many. We've had more revolutions than we've had in France, Russia put together about the NHS. Why are we hearing more? Good morning to you and Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year, Nick. Well, we're bringing the NHS into the 21st century.
How many times have I heard that? This is like Les Miserables with you. It's just constant revolution.
Well, I'm not going to start singing, especially not this early in the morning.
Indeed.
But look, the good news here is that NHS Online will open up faster access to treatment across a range of specialties initially, four specialties initially, that will enable people to get faster access to a specialist. That specialist, who patients might choose to see online rather than in person to get faster access, will then be able to look at their case, look at their symptoms, and they may choose to refer them to a diagnostic test and scan, in which case you'll be able to access that at a local hospital or diagnostic centre. It may be they say, right, I know what you need. Here's your prescription. It pops up in your app. You can collect it locally. And it may be that you need surgery, in which case, again, you'll be referred to a local provider. But the beauty of this is it will get people faster access to specialist care, will speed up that process. And for anyone listening who thinks, well, I either don't want to or I'm not able to see someone online. Well, the good news is if someone like me has got out of your way in the waiting list by going online, you'll be seen faster. So everyone will benefit. And we think this will generate 8.5 million appointments. And all it will need is 5% of consultants to do an extra 6 hours a week through NHS Online. And we will deliver those appointments. And obviously you kind of go up in ratio. So if therefore 10% took part, well, then you'd only need them to do an extra 3 hours a week and so on.
What conditions are we specifically talking about, Secretary of State?
So this will cover gastroenterology, urology, gynecology and ophthalmology. And it will include conditions like enlarged prostates or cataracts or menopause or endometriosis. So there are a number of conditions that will benefit. It won't be right for everyone, by the way, and that's the other reassurance I can give your listeners, is it's only where it's been determined to be safe and clinically appropriate that we'll be giving people this option. Clearly, for lots of conditions and specialties, it would not be appropriate and would not be offered.
Are you able to give us an idea what this might cut waiting time down to? So if I was to present myself and I thought I had a prostate issue, currently, Mr. Ferrari, it's going to take you 8 weeks, but now, with your new system, your opinion, it's going to take 8 days, or are these numbers not available, Mr. Streeting?
Not at this stage, but just to give you a sense of the proportion, I mean, we think we can deliver 8.5 million appointments through this. These conditions covered by this account for about a quarter of the total number of cases on the NHS waiting list. So that's quite a significant proportion of the waiting list would potentially benefit. What will be the variable here is where we've got capacity, where you've got consultants who are able to log on and do an extra session or do an extra few hours a week to contribute. And the benefit is we know that the waiting lists are better in some parts of the country than others, and patterns ebb and flow. So I think the benefit here is that it brings the NHS into the 21st century. It gives patients real choice. It makes sure we're making best use of capacity that is available. And of course, it's funded. And as I regularly make the case, we are putting more investment into the NHS, but money can't solve all of our problems. It has to be met with modernisation. And that's what this approach is about. And it's one of a number of things we're doing to cut NHS waiting lists.
You have an opinion piece in today's iNewspaper. They headline this, as does the Daily Telegraph and others, as an online hospital. Respectfully, that's a bit of a stretch. It's not an online hospital, is it?
Well, I think it's a fair characterisation.
Are you really? Okay.
Doctors would normally be working in a hospital, and indeed these will be hospital specialists who are okay. taking part.
Well, where could it end then? If you will allow, I thought you might sort of preach a bit of caution there. If you will allow that, that's how far, I mean, how far might we ultimately end up with online provision of healthcare?
Well, I think in this world of rapidly changing technology, I actually think health and social care will always be people-based services. So the way I would characterise my approach to technology in health and social care is digital where possible, human where it really matters. Because one of the things that I'm noticing with the technology we're deploying and the potential that it has is that it might be about ease and convenience, as in this case. It might be about better productivity, freeing up staff time so they're not spending loads of time on admin or form filling or building rotas or building case lists. And it also it frees up clinicians' time to do the things that really matter when it comes to patient care. If your GP, for example, is using ambient AI to record their interaction with their patient and write up notes in real time for the GP to review at the end of the appointment, that means the GP is looking at you rather than being shackled to their screen. So I think it will free up clinicians' time to do the things that they really love doing and we as patients value. So I see technology as an assistant, right, as a co-pilot, as an enabler, rather than as a replacement, certainly in health and social care.
All right, last couple of minutes together. One final health matter. The NHS has awarded contracts worth £73 million to pay for translators for non-English-speaking patients. Why that amount of money, Health Secretary?
Yeah, so speaking of which, and I think this is where technology will be able to help us, you can understand it why where English isn't someone's first language and they are accessing medical care, why it may be necessary to bring in translation services so that the doctor can...
It doesn't happen elsewhere, respectfully, Mr. Streeting. I was ill in Portugal a few years ago. No one paid me any Portuguese. I just had to fight my way through by pointing a lot.
Well, I would have
amazingly
liked to,
I lived.
I would have liked to have seen that.
Yes, some would say unfortunately I lived, but I got through. Why are we so generous?
Well, we want to make sure that people receive access to safe and effective care, and communication matters in health. I do think this is one of those areas where technology will really be able to help us. I mean, the good news is that, you know, my franglaise or my kind of bad English-Italian is no longer required when I go on holiday, because most of the time I'm using Google Translate to translate menus, and obviously we do benefit from the fact lots of people speak English around the world too, let's be honest. But I do think, you know, things like live translation will be possible through technology, and we should be spending less, and it's my aim to spend less on translation services.
All right. How robust should the United Kingdom be towards Donald Trump if his eyes are set on Greenland, Mr. Streeting?
Well, the Prime Minister has been robust and unequivocal about where we stand on this. Greenland is part of the Kingdom of Denmark. That's their choice. That's their self-determination. And I've heard what President Trump has said overnight. Greenland is playing its part in the NATO alliance. They are a critical part of this country's national security and our collective security through NATO. And they play that part effectively as a member of NATO, as being part of the Kingdom of Denmark.
It would be an attack on all of NATO, wouldn't it? Attack on one is attack on all.
Look, I think we've heard from the Danish government that this would undermine the NATO alliance at a time when we need to be standing together. That's the Prime Minister's view. And that's why, to be honest, in recent days, and I've seen some of the strident criticism made of the United States action in Venezuela from colleagues who I enormously respect, and I appreciate people are saying, well, that criticism is more strident than what the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary right. said. Why is that? Well, that's because the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary are not commentators. They are world leaders, and they are choosing their words and their timing very carefully to try and influence things positively rather than detrimentally.
OK. Lastly, the Daily Telegraph has a headline, page 2, Scottish MPs behind Wes coronation plot. What lies behind this, Mr. Streeting?
I have no idea. I do not recognise that characterisation.
This is Anna Sawar, the Scottish Labour leader, who says, quotes, many, or is reported to have said, many people are totally hacked off I've changed his word, with Westminster. Mr. Streeting?
Well, it's definitely true that people are fed up with Westminster and have seen real challenges in the conduct of politics and politicians over many years. That's the mess we're trying to clean up. And look, I know that, you know, in the last 18 months we've been in, the government has made some mistakes. We are very honest and upfront about that. We'll aim to make fewer mistakes in 2026. As you'll hear from the Prime Minister this morning at Cabinet, we're focused, even against this challenging global backdrop, of improving the cost of living, cutting NHS waiting lists and making sure that our streets and our country is safer. That's the Prime Minister's priority. And I've certainly had my marching orders from the leader of the Scottish Labour Party, Anas Sarwar. He has told me to keep cutting NHS waiting lists in England because he wishes that there was an effective Labour government doing the same in Scotland. In fact, there are more people in the city of Glasgow waiting more than 2 years for treatment than there are in the entirety of England. That is the SNP's record of failure in Scotland. That's why we need change and a new direction with Anas Sarwar and Jackie Bailey and the Scottish Labour Party. And we are all putting our shoulders to the wheel to make sure we get a Scottish Labour government.
Grateful for your time today. Read all about it. Mr. Streeting has an opinion piece in the I newspaper. Wes Streeting, Health Secretary, appearing here on LBC and endorsing the idea of a move towards this aspect of online hospitals. Initially, as we told, prostate and menopause symptoms. Let's explore that. We'll come to the news bulletin later in the hour. It's 9 after 8 now, and we'll stay with this conversation. Dr. Aziza Sese is a GP who has an online platform, talks with Dr. Sese, promoting healthier lifestyle, and joins me now. Well, I specifically asked the Health Secretary whether he sees this as a move towards online hospitals, and in a sense, he does. Would you concur? Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Nick. How are you? Thank you so much for having me. So in regards to online hospital, I would say that technically, especially during the pandemic lockdown, we did go down the virtual route. We did have online consultations. We were seeing patients virtually, and it's become a routine, which we are doing to this day. So it's not unusual that we can see patients in an online capacity. The reality is it can be harder to see patients face to face, and sometimes it can cause delays. So actually having this as a potential option for patients who struggle with conditions such as endometriosis, which can cause really severe debilitating symptoms that can affect someone's ability to even live, then it's a good thing that hopefully they can see a specialist, get an assessment, and get a potential diagnosis rather than having to wait up to 2 years. Conditions like endometriosis, the stat is that it takes around 9 years on average to get a diagnosis. So this could potentially reduce the wait times.
Doctor, how far can it go? So we talk about endometriosis, we talk about UTIs, urinary tract infection, we talk about menopause symptoms, we talk about prostate. Ultimately, how far might this take us in the provision of healthcare?
I mean, personally, I believe that what it can do is it means that it gives the patients the autonomy, the choice to be able to see a consultant or a specialist virtually to have their condition assessed in that manner. So they can still see the GP and they still have the choice and the option to go down the traditional route, which we know wait times may be longer. This will help to reduce that.
Grateful for your time, Dr. Aziza Sese. You have the platform Talks with Dr. Sese, 11 after 8. Let's get your voices on the radio. That's what we're about in the morning. Lance is in Bristol. Lance, are you buying into the idea of these online hospitals? Good morning.
Good morning. Happy New Year again. In the specific areas that are mentioned, I'll just say, if I have no problem. But looking at the whole of the NHS problem from numbers, the time that consultancy things are going to be freeing up from admin, they actually need to run the service, which is under provided with gaps in the service from consultants downwards. And in particular, with the problem of not enough consultants coming through, and the consultants need to train the expansion of the juniors, and we've got the problem of that having a bottleneck, it's going to shove things around. It may help that group of people, but it's a bit like moving the deck chairs. So whilst it's a good idea, you need more hands on the deck.
But as we heard from the Health Secretary, if, of course, we have a number of online appointments, that would free up the face-to-face appointments, wouldn't it? And the online appointments, and if we listen to the Health Secretary, and he's closer to it than I, they can get through them far quicker online than you can physically seeing somebody. So won't that help with capacity?
Well, because there's such a lack of capacity, 6 hours a week, if it's that amount, or even three, when a consultant is not even getting his time for SPAs, which is for his own development, and then he has to train juniors. And I've been in that position myself. But I used to run some telemedicine services for heart failure, which is great. But it is time-consuming. But the doctor's time is you've got too few gaps in the row to consultant level. It's great to have that time, but that time can be taken away from things that still aren't backfilled, you see. So that needs to be resolved at the same time, and that will take a longer period. So there will be a benefit, but there will be a cost.
Lastly, sorry, if you don't mind, so you have worked in healthcare, have you?
Well, I've been a consultant from 1993 till 2 years ago, and I rang you about the problem of juniors not being backfilled. A week or two ago, you'll know me under various synonyms because I mentioned my memoir.
Okay.
You might recall it. I've spoken to Ian Dale about it recently. Right. So basically, I've had a long time. I even backfilled for junior doctors on strike when I was doing some consultant work in the last few years as well. So I've seen the top to bottom of it. And it's not a bad idea, and it's something that should be considered as
but can I ask you the same question, Lance, that I put to the doctor before you and that I put to the health secretary? How far can it go? Because it's not going to be able to do A&E online, are you?
No. I mean, I think you need to have the initial contact with the person to assess them. So, for example, with the heart failure service, you see them in the normal way. They may be as an outpatient or they may have been in hospital, but then you can get them out sooner with a bit of kit, which they can enter their own information and you can see remote, so you can have a virtual ward round. And the virtual ward round will still take time, of course, but you can have specialist nurses that can pick up the difficult ones and you can have automated responses to those that are going along the right line so they're not gaining weight, they're not having problems with their oxygen.
Lance, thank you. I will leave it there. Michael, you will be the next caller, but I hope you can hold to the other side of the news headlines. And staying with Health Matters, later in the show we'll be hearing from someone who's taken some fairly drastic actions regards their personal health.
I've lost 5 stone after injecting Manjaro. However, I'm now £2,500 in debt. I'm Emma Donaldson, and I'll be talking to Nick about this later in the show.
Plus to the building sector. Well, Keir the Builder can't. Apparently a third of all new homes built in Labour's first year would have been required just to house arriving migrants, and they are woefully behind those goals, or that rather lofty ambition. We'll be exploring that later in this hour. It's 8:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has ruled out a snap election in Venezuela, saying that he is in charge of the country. Sir Keir Starmer will join European leaders in France later for talks on Ukraine's peace deal. And the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has told LBC that a new online hospital initiative in England will fast-track care and cut waiting lists. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most. Patchy snow showers across central and northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, these severe delays do continue for Heathrow Express, Great Western Railway and Elizabeth Line services to and from Paddington. It's because of the problems with the overhead wires. On the Underground, no Piccadilly line running between Cot Fosters and Arnos Grove. And then there are severe delays on the Metropolitan line and also minor delays on the Northern Circle, District, Jubilee, Bakerloo and Central lines. On the road, still very busy on the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section. And that's because of a car which has broke down early. One lane is still closed for recovery. And in Harlesden, the High Street remains closed eastbound at Station Road. It's for emergency repair work, so do expect delays.
This is LBC.
Hiya, Kenny the hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world. We're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, electric cars will now be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's continue to explore the idea of these online hospitals. We had a lengthy conversation with the Health Secretary of West Streeting. He used the word revolutionary and revolution. I don't know why there continually has to be revolutions in the NHS. Why don't we just try and make it work? 19 minutes after 8. Michael in Sunderland, thanks for hanging on the line. Michael, the point you want to make. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Nick. Well, there's a couple of things, but the main thing is, it seems to forget about people. I'm only 65, and I don't have a smartphone, I don't have a computer, and obviously as you get a bit older, you get a bit more illnesses. So when you've got to contact the doctors, they send you text messages, go online.
Right.
I was lucky, it took us 5 months to try to get diagnosed with myself, and I found out I had a disease called IBD. Not misdiagnosed as Gilbert syndrome. So,
sorry, sir. What is IBD? I'm sorry to talk over you, but I'm intrigued.
Infectionary bowel disease.
Oh, I'm sorry. That sounds ghastly. I'm so sorry.
Well, it's two categories down from Crohn's disease.
Oh dear.
So
can that be fixed, or will you have to live with it, Michael?
Well, I've got an appointment tomorrow to see a specialist again.
I see. Okay.
But what I'm saying is, they forget about people. I think everybody's like my son's in the 30s. I was being brought up with technology. What about the people? I've got an auntie who's 80.
Yes.
Can't even go on holiday yet because she hasn't got an email address of a mobile phone.
You have a mobile phone, don't you?
Yes, I have, but it's not a smartphone.
Right.
I just have a normal phone. I'm retired. I don't need a smartphone.
Right. I mean, the argument they would make, or indeed the Health Secretary told us, Michael, is that because of people like your sons, and indeed people like my sons and others, who are able to go online, that will free up appointment time for people. That is what they say. It will free up appointment times for folks such as yourself. What do you think is the reality?
The reality is, I was fitting well up until I got about 50, 55, then obviously because of the jobs I did, manual work and different things, your body gets wear and tear. How many people in the 30s, I have to calm down because it annoys me, the hell this, the 30s and 40s, use the hospital. It's people as they get older, like you and me, Nick, those in the 60s, 70s or 80s. So how many of them have got the technology to use that?
I absolutely underscore what you're saying. But my question was, they would say, the Health Secretary and others would say, but that means because your sons are online, you, Michael, can get to see your doctor, but you don't think that's the truth?
Oh, yes. Well, what about all the people who haven't got any children in your family? Like, my auntie, who's 85, she's my auntie, through marriage. She's got no family whatsoever, and she comes to our nieces and nephews and other family members. But what about people who haven't? They just seem to be like...
Yes.
Didn't get started with this government, okay, because they're just thinking 5 years. They're not thinking long-term. I'm more concerned about my grandson's future in 10, 15 years.
Yes.
It's going to be a job for him in education. But sticking to the subject...
Yeah.
What about the people who are 65, 70,
no,
and 80 now who haven't
you.
Got the stuff on them? Are they witnessed to die? Is that why they did the winter fuel cuts? So
well,
they all die in the winter.
I'm sure that's not their ambition. Lastly, I'll tell you what, as you and I are roughly in the same age bracket, it's very exciting to try and learn new technology or learn new things, and it's good for you as well. Is there any way that you could be encouraged by your sons or your grandson to possibly get a smartphone and start WhatsApping and everything else? Do you think that could be a good idea, Michael?
Well, my grandson's only 6.
That's probably a permanent age. It's better than me.
No, I know what you're saying there and stuff like that. But What about, and how much is all it expensive? That Mike's phone's in that, they pay thousands of pounds for phones and on contacts and stuff like that. Yeah. I've got my own phone, I only spent a couple hundred pounds.
I hear what you said.
It's a domino effect, Nick. I know what they're trying to say, but unfortunately, they've got to wait until 2060, until we're all dead and being brought up.
Well, no, don't let's... How concerned are you about the advancement of AI then, Michael?
Oh, well, I'm really concerned about that for both my grandson's future.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Best wishes to your grandson, the six-year-old boy. Best wishes to your sons and your whole family, Michael. Thank you. Maybe just try a smartphone. They're great. They really are. They change. And you can program in people's phone numbers and they know when they ring you and you don't have to answer the phone. It's fantastic. Particularly if you're trying to dodge people. It's the only reason I've done it. 8:23, I mentioned AI with Michael there. Now, this is an extraordinary story and thank the Lord... We've got one of the best technology journalists on the planet to explain it. So I'm just going to read to you from one of the newspapers and then Chris Stoker-Walker will explain what the hell is going on. Ofcom has made urgent contact with Elon Musk's X after its new image generation feature was used to digitally undress children and women without the consent. I'll just say those words again. Undress children and women without their consent. There are calls for the government to stop using X for official communications. Also calls for enforcement action to be taken over the posts, which could have broken UK law. Musk's Grok AI-generated images of women, which appear to be illegal, include those created without users' consent of them in bikinis, wet clothing and underwear. Women, yes, and children. One of my colleagues showed me some images this morning of a young woman who was attending, I think, was it a concert or a festival or something like that, in a perfectly normal dress. And then it had been broken down and she was wearing a particularly skimpy bikini, obviously done without any of her consent. Chris Stoker-Walker's technology journalist, wrote How AI Ate the World, A Brief History of Artificial Intelligence and TikTok Boom, and joins me now. OK, you can probably explain a little better the phenomenon, how they're doing it and how it is to be guarded against. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, a huge problem that we have here. So the way that it works, to take your first question, is effectively these AI models are trained on lots and lots of images. It will be of no surprise to any of our listeners that the internet is full of images of scantily clad individuals. And so it happens to be pretty good at managing to replicate those. The problem here is that most AI companies have this capability, but they turn it off because they realize that that is prurient, it is illegal, and it is hugely distasteful. With Elon Musk, of course, we have someone who wants to maximize the ability for free speech, someone who is very avowedly anti-woke and says that he wants things to be allowed to take their natural course. And unfortunately, what that means in society increasingly is that women are going to be attacked here. And I think that this really, Nick, is AI's first true morality test. We've talked in the past on this program and many others on LBC around some of the issues around copyright, around displacement of jobs, around some of the concerns that you were talking about with Michael and his worries about the rise of technology. But actually, the moral issue here is, are we going to allow a technology to effectively be weaponized against 51% of the population? And at the minute, it seems like the guardrails that Elon Musk has turned off on his AI generator Grok allow that to happen.
Now, currently, my understanding is the United Kingdom has made the generation of non-consensual sexual imagery illegal. We already have laws in place for that. If I am correct, surely they can... It's not that much of a quantum leap to stretch them to include this, is it, Chris?
No, this is under the Online Safety Act. So it's illegal to create sexually explicit images, including some of those deepfakes that I suppose we would probably call these, although generally the creation of these has been less in the mainstream. You've had to hunt out so-called nudifying apps that use AI to do this sort of stuff. What's different here is that this is built in effectively to X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, so that hundreds of millions of users can just call it up, frankly, by typing in the word Grok to their Twitter profile. So, yeah, this is a big issue. This is one that we do have legislative measures against. The problem, of course, is that Elon Musk has shown that he's quite willing to try and flout some of those legislative measures, not necessarily just around this, but he's had squabbles with Brazil around these sorts of things, issues of free speech before. We obviously saw last summer, well, now 2 years ago, summer 2024, around the discussion of the riots, Elon Musk and Keir Starmer got into a bit of a barney there around the ability to kind of have free speech. So he has shown that he is willing to stand up. What I think is different here, and Musk has said that anybody who is creating these images are wrong to do so, that they should be treated as if they were, frankly, creating non-consensual pornographic images or images of child sexual abuse, rather than just the AI, so they should be punished as that. This, I think, is slightly different because this is very much a line in the sand. And whether or not you like Elon Musk and whether or not you think that he is good for humanity, I think even he is realising that actually your free speech does have its limits.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Stoker-Walker, technology journalist, wrote How AI Ate the World, A Brief History of Artificial Intelligence and TikTok Boom, 8:28. Let's come back to the NHS, that call I took from Michael, who says that people in the 60s and beyond, 70s and 80s, Jan was listening. I'm 78, I have a son who is an IT consultant, which I admit is a great boon these days. But even without this advantage, I would stay abreast of new technologies. Dawn in Uckfield, my mum is 89, uses a smartphone. She uses WhatsApp, Google and video calls. Come on, you need to try to learn to use one. Don't worry about it. Once you get going, it's so easy. Dave's in Longfield. Can you see the day of an online hospital? Is that a welcome day to you, Dave?
No, it's not, Nick. Because
why?
It's embarrassing. Because I can't read and write, I'm dyslexic.
Ah.
And I've also got learning difficulties. And then even when you go into the doctor's surgery and they say, oh, can you use the system? You know, there's a computer system.
Is that where you type in your date of birth? Is that the one?
Yeah, and it's all very... And it just... It makes you feel stupid.
I'm sorry about that.
And it makes you feel embarrassed, you know.
So when you go to see your doctor, presumably you go and see the receptionist and tell her or him your date of birth?
Yeah, they've got me down in red, apparently, so...
They've got you down in red. What does that mean?
Red. I don't know. I ain't got a clue. I've been told that I'm in red.
Right.
But
not
all
in
sounds
red,
well and good. But no. But when you can't read and write and you've got learning difficulties, it makes you feel stupid.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that, and that shouldn't be the case. But can I again put to you what the health secretary said, is that people who are not with those situations or conditions, such as myself, we should avail ourselves of all the online help, because then you will get better provision, is what he would say, Dave.
Yeah, I just think it's very frustrating for people like myself, that's all.
I know, it is. Dave, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm pleased that your surgery obviously has some kind of note on your files and helps you. Thanks for your input on that. We will stay with this then. Coming up after the news... A third of all new homes built in Labour's first year will have been required just to house arriving migrants. And those targets, they're falling way behind. We'll explore that more after this. It's 8:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get the headlines from Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says the United States must nurse Venezuela back to health before an election can be held there. Mr. Trump has said that his vice president and defence secretary will help oversee America's involvement in the country. France's President Macron will host around 30 allies later to discuss the peace plan for Ukraine. Keir Starmer is among those heading to Paris for a meeting of the Coalition of the Willing. And the Health Secretary has told LBC that a new online hospital service in England will fast-track care and cut wait times. West Streeting's told Nick that patients will be able to speak to doctors over an upgraded NHS app due to be rolled out next year. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most. Patchy snow showers for central and northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I would like to make 2026 the year of the pub because I do not want to see this institution die. If it dies because no one goes, fine. If it dies because it's not profitable because people are choosing not to do it in that way, then okay, that's a choice. So be it. Businesses have to wash their own face. But these changes are some of the ways in which this entire industry is just being killed without people even having a choice. It doesn't matter if a lot of people go, it still won't be profitable because of the tax changes made. That ain't fair.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
MJ the Musical, the electrifying Olivier award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself. Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, staying with online hospitals. Peter, you'll be the next caller. Paul in Cornwall, onto the texts and the emails. Paul in Cornwall asks, how is a consultant going to diagnose an enlarged prostate online? Will I need to turn the camera and flashlight on and up a certain part of my anatomy? No. But what they will be able to do, obviously... Listen, why the resistance to this? If this means that you get quicker diagnosis of prostate, endometriosis, menopause issues, whatever it might be, I don't understand why there's such opposition. Anne in St Albans is all very well to get more consultants and doctors on board. What about the supporting follow-ups if patients have to have hands-on treatments? Meanwhile, on the subject of £72 million that we're going to provide to translation services, Alan says no one should get our free healthcare if they don't speak our language. The country is a joke. As I said some years ago, I had a condition when I was in Portugal. I was on holiday in Portugal, and I reported to a hospital clinic. There was no suggestion that they were going to find me someone who could speak Portuguese. I just had to muddle my way through. Mind you, I suppose Google Translate would solve all of that, or any other translation services. Peter's in Buckhurst Hill. Peter, this is a good day. Yes or no? Good morning.
Well, I'm 85. Right. I died recently, so no.
Sorry, who died? Did you say your...
My wife.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so... My commiserations, right.
Well, I'm afraid there's no good days, but...
Oh, dear.
...to make you aware of, which you obviously don't understand.
Go on.
You took a long time to learn English, and you use it constantly. Took a long time to learn to read as well and write, and you use it constantly.
Yes.
AI, or whichever one you want to point to, with the mobile phones.
Yes.
I was at a dinner the other day, five of them were on their bloody phone.
Sorry, you were on a dinner the other day and everyone else was on their mobile phone, did you say? Sorry.
Yeah, and that's the only way they learn how to use it.
Right, and sorry, the people you were with, the similar age to you or your children, or who were they?
Children.
Children?
Yeah, but they're still in their 60s, 50s.
Right, okay. So children in their 60s are on their mobile phones. Right,
yeah.
And it makes you angry, Peter.
Well, they don't communicate. Us oldens want to be communicated to me. The other day I tried to get through to my bank.
Yes.
This might take 20 minutes, but we are sorry. 20 minutes came up and they cut the line. That's something I've got to put up with. So I tried again. 20 minutes came up. And the young lady said, can you hear me? I said, yes, quite clearly.
Yes.
And then the bloke behind her was trying to give her instructions.
Right.
She cut me off.
I have a question for you. Why, if there is one near, why wouldn't you go to a branch of your bank?
Because they're closing them all down.
But is there one near you?
And 85. How do I get there?
Well, hopefully you get out and about, do you, sir?
No.
Well, you were at lunch the other day.
That's right.
Ah, and you see, Columbo.
And my
final question. Have you got a pen? Sorry, go on.
And my grandson took me there in his car.
Well, that's lovely, but surely your grandson could run you up to the local branch of Lloyds, Barclays, National, Westminster. There are many other banks.
What, you mean my children don't work?
No, but if he took you to lunch, Surely you could have gone via the bank. I'm just trying to save you frustration, because I would go raving mad if I waited 20 minutes and was cut off, and I waited another 20 minutes and it was cut off. I mean, the managing director, the chief executive of the bank would have a letter the like of which he or she had never seen in their lives.
I've tried to see the manager. Oh, he's very busy.
Right. Well, I think next time you're going out to lunch with who sounds a smashing bloke, with your grandson or those children in their 60s, why don't you go via a branch of the bank, go in there and just say, look, I've had enough of this. I've been with you X years. I've got X in the bank. This is only going to go one way unless you resolve this, and let me know how you get on. Peter, enjoy your next lunch. Thank you for that. Let's change to other matters. We might return to healthcare. I have to say, this online hospital doesn't really seem to work. We should have had old Wes in. Wes says he could take some of these calls. We've got to blame Wes. There he is, trying to be Prime Minister. I'm trying to talk up his bid for online hospitals. It falls to me to sell technology. Now, that is a rare event. Let's move to other matters. A third of all new homes built in Labour's first year would have been required just to house arriving migrants. Analysis has discovered 204,000 migrants entered between June 2024 and June last year, but only 237,630 new homes were constructed in that period. Now, I remind you, this government's very lofty ambition is 1.5 million homes in its parliament, in its duration. So you know that 237,000 isn't going to get anywhere near that number, is it? It's going to be a start, but not fulfil their ambitions. James Hummerston Pope is a housing commentator and joins me now. What's the latest on the house building front? How are the government getting on? Morning to you, James.
Good morning. How they're getting on is, I suppose, a quick way to sum up, is not very well at all. The reality is you've already mentioned it, 1.5 million new homes they've pledged in their first government or in their tenure. The sheer number that they've built is, quite frankly, nowhere near what they need to build. It's 300,000 a year. And the reality is we're at a deficit of around 6.5 million homes in the United Kingdom. So we're in a really bad way. And I don't think people can grasp the situation, because it is that bad at the moment.
Why would it appear we are so bad in this country at building new homes?
There's a multitude of reasons. First of all, we've got protecting wildlife. And look, I'm not saying pave over all of our green spaces, but there are plenty of brownfield sites. So sites that were once offices, sites that were once factories that could be redeveloped into new homes. They are just sitting there falling to waste. So there's one place that we could focus on. The other part is we've got house builders and local authorities that are focusing on tagging on thousands of new homes to towns that, quite frankly, cannot take that because the infrastructure is not there. So we can understand why local areas where they have new developments say, well, we don't want these new homes here because I can't get a doctor's appointment already, or it takes me half an hour to drive 2 miles. The reality is we need to be focusing on building new towns, new communities, and not just tagging on. There's tons of reasons, but they're just the main ones.
If we were having this conversation in Rome or in Paris or any other major European city, would there be similar hurdles, or are they possibly taking a more adventurous approach to this issue?
I think there's always hurdles when it comes to house building, because people don't want to ruin the location that they live in. But I feel like this is, whilst not living in Rome or Paris, I feel like this is a situation that we have created in the UK, and that it's compounded by the fact that we have, you know, mass legal and illegal migration into the UK, where we need to house so many individuals. And that's a massive problem.
Okay, so they wanted 1.5. At the current rate, they're going to struggle to get around 1 million. Where do you think it might come up, unless there is quite a change in the weather?
I think we're going to see them build around 750,000 to 800,000 new homes. It's shocking. It's actually shocking.
And are they aware of that yet, do you sense, lastly? Or are they still peddling the truth, peddling the lie, which will be unfortunate truth, that they're going to try and get that 1.5?
Yeah, I think they know full well that they've overestimated what they believe they can build. And now, rather than hold their hands up and say, look, the problem's far bigger than we ever envisaged, they're peddling the lie just to try and keep face, because they can't take another scandal.
James Hummerston Pope is a housing commentator. Thank you for your time. Happy New Year to you. 8:41. Luke's in Bromley on this story. Luke, what do you want to say about building? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, hello, there's obviously a massive shortage of housing stock,
yes,
and there's hardly any on the way, so we know it's not going to happen. My suggestion is there's plenty of plots of land and communities around where people have large gardens, even big enough for another house. The government could make it easier for houses, individuals like us, to be able to sell that land, put some good money in our pocket, and it can go through the authorities quite quick to be getting built.
You've got a bit of land down there in Kent, South East London, have you? And you'd be happy to have a house in your back garden?
Well, yeah, if given the right money for the land. And then along comes, you know, I know we're talking about factories and all that land. Well, yes, that needs to be sorted too. But then there's the small individual house builders who can't build multiple houses, but there's ones that can build one house at a time. And then, like I say, imagine if you could put, say, 50, 60, 70 grand in someone's pocket.
Well, it'd be more than that, wouldn't it? I would imagine you'd get more for a building plot in Bromley than 50 grand, surely.
Well, maybe it's 80 to 100, but whatever.
Yeah.
And imagine how that would help someone, obviously, their savings and be able to affordability. That's
it's a good idea. The problem would be, of course,
They get stuck in several places. Number one, because it's fearful the authorities will turn it down or just say no. Mm-hmm. Number two, to build a house, it's more expensive. So I think they need to give tax reductions to building houses.
Yeah. The other issue, of course, and this might really encapsulate the problems we have, is how your neighbours might react if they suddenly saw a house going up in the back garden next door to them.
Well, that's all very nice, but when people don't have housing, you know, I think we need to, I mean, it depends where as well, but people need to be a little bit more open to such things.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone wants to say never again, but the fact is, it's going to cause more problems if you don't provide. And also, we need infrastructure too. We need doctor surgeries, we need all that stuff as well. So the government need to wake up and start thinking of fresh ideas, not just keep blaming the developers. Because the big ones do sit on their hands because they know how to do it. But there's individuals with little plots of land which could sell.
Well, let's see what others make of that idea. If you've got a bit of land, of course, again, Luke, the problems would be, I say, your neighbour didn't like that idea, so then it's held up, it has to go to the local authority, and they then agree, and I do sense many local authorities, the sort of default position is no, and they have to be persuaded otherwise. Luke, thank you. Let's see what others make of it. Phil is in Penrith. Phil, you're on the building story. What do you want to tell me? Morning.
Yes. Have I told you about where I used to live, the Eccles Hall Street brownfield site in Manchester?
I don't recall our conversation about Eccles High Street, no.
Eccles Hall Street.
Oh, I'm sorry, Eccles Hall Street. Go ahead. Yep, I need
to know. It's approximately 30 acres of brownfield site. I used to live there, terraced housing.
Okay, right.
And they finished knocking the houses down. They finished the demolitions about 1978. And since 1978, that land has lain derelict, growing weeds.
Oh.
It's an absolute disgrace. I've had good arguments with Andy Burnham. I've been told so many fairy stories. Thing is, they don't realise that when I was a kid, I used to know every rat hole around there, and I'm not having what they're telling me.
Right. Why is there the delay, Phil?
I strongly suspect it's a development issue because there's a number of people owning the land, and they want the price of the land to go up.
But you've got to capitalise on it eventually.
Yes,
otherwise
you'll
go to your grave. You know, you go to your grave with a great chunk of Eccles Hall Street. What's the point of that?
Well, you tell me why. I don't know. It used to be a thriving community, an industrial community, people who actually worked. So, and it's just grown weeds and mess.
Sorry, what is it now? So it's all been levelled, has it? The housing's
It's been levelled, but it's just full of weeds and it's a mess.
And how big is it?
About 30 acres.
Goodness me, the houses that could go in there. Next time we have Andy Burnham on, we'll have to ask about that. Phil, thank you. You look after yourself. Calls coming in again on online hospitals. We'll take more on that. Then coming up in the next hour, I might have to take eyesight tests for a certain age driver.
If there was any other walk of life where over 1,600 people were being killed on our roads every year, that they would want us to think again. So we are consulting on a range of measures, such as compulsory eye tests for over 70s.
Yeah, but of those 1,600, how many are killed by elderly drivers? I put it to you that, and of course there will be elderly drivers who cause accidents, of course there will, I'm not being stupid, but it's the young, mostly male motorists, isn't it? What's the reality there? Plus, cash crisis for Stonewall.
I'm very proud about the gay rights movement, through Stonewall and other organisations too, is that we've just made the argument, people have listened, they've understood, they've realised that they've got gay relatives.
The great actor Sir Ian McKellen, a founding member of Stonewall, but they've now got a cash crisis. We'll be looking at why in the next hour. It's 8:46. LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says that he must nurse Venezuela back to health before elections can be held there. Sir Keir Starmer is to join European leaders in France later for talks on Ukraine's peace deal. And mandatory eye tests for drivers over the age of 70 may be introduced as part of new road safety measures. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most. Patchy snow showers for central northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Because of the overhead wire problems right near to Paddington Station, these problems on the trains do continue. Heathrow Express, Great Western Railway and also Elizabeth Line services are severely disrupted and will be for the rest of the day. On the Underground, the Piccadilly Line is suspended between Cockfosters and Arnos Grove, and the Northern Line can't run between Kennington and Battersea Power Station. On the roads, it's very busy on the M25 anti-clockwise to Junction 24 at Potter's Bar, and that's because a lorry has broken down and one lane is closed. Slightly better news on the M4. This is eastbound at the elevated section. All the lanes are back open. That car which broke down earlier has been recovered, but there are still lengthy delays.
LBC.
Say yes to summer with the biggest ever TUI sale with a My TUI account. Say yes to flexible payment options. Say yes to free kids' places, even in the school summer holidays. With so many holiday options to choose from, you pick it, we sort it. Holiday countdown started. TUI, Atoll and app to protect it. Booking T's and C's apply. Selected departures. Minimum spend applies. Subject to availability. See website for details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Now I'm as guilty as anyone when it comes to ignoring things. Rogue grey hairs, red flags in relationships, or that service reminder on your car dash. Luckily, that one's easy. Visit Cinch for fat-free servicing at over 100 locations. Any car, whether you bought it from Cinch or not. With MOTs, $39.95 and servicing from only $129.95. To book your service or buy your next car, visit cinch.co.uk. See cinch.co.uk/servicing for details. Terms and exclusions apply.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Talk more about building in a moment, 10 minutes before 9, but Jane's in Camden hanging on the line to talk about online hospitals. I think I quite welcome the idea. Obviously, we need to see how it works in practice. Where are you on it? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, I mean, before I kind of give my opinion, I suppose what I have picked up is just the number of your male callers that are calling in with their complaints of why it doesn't work.
I know. And some of that grumpy. It's
about self-help, isn't it? And you know, then in the same breath, they will go on to say about how much money we're wasting on interpreters for migrants, which I agree is absolutely appalling, and we shouldn't be doing that. That, in my opinion, is more of a charity issue rather than something that should be picked up by the NHS. Perhaps, you know, there should be charities that should be paying for that. However, it does come back to, you know, self-help and also the sense of entitlement that we have in this country. You know, it's that kind of thing of, well, I can't get to the appointment and I don't have this and I don't have that and I don't have the other. And I just think to myself, with the way that the world is at the moment, and if we're on the cusp of, you know, World War III, as everybody is kind of talking about, you know, what are we going to do if we get to that point? Are we going to start saying, well, I'm sorry, I don't have my mobile phone and I can't quite get to the front line? So, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, we have to stop being so entitled in this country. You know, the guy that was talking about, well, I don't have a mobile phone and I'm because I'm tight. Well, that's a you problem and you need to go and sort that out. It shouldn't be down to me, a taxpayer, to have to kind of fund all of these different, you know, means and ways for you to get your hospital appointment. I just think it's wrong.
All I would say is, I hear what you say, and by the way, I do try and embrace your attitude as regards life, and I don't want to speak ill of other callers, but this, you know, I'm in my 60s, I'm in my 70s, I'm in my 80s, I can't do this, I'd rather think of it. Well, actually, this might be a bit more of a challenge, but I'm going to make damn certain I can do it. What I would say is those folk have, of course, been paying in for decade after decade after decade. And now, when they need a bit of help, some would argue it's not fair that they're excluded because they don't have smartphones or internet access.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not to say that, you know, they cannot get that help. But, but you know, in terms of the money that they put in, that is to pay for the NHS. That isn't to pay for, you know, all sorts of and ways to get them, you know, to get them to their appointments. That is, you know, there are members of their family that they can rely on. There are, you know, it's just excuse after excuse. And I do get it. I do get that there are all sorts of different people, but we can't keep catering for every little, you know, individual, especially when, you know, what you were saying, you don't want to speak of other callers. But when someone says, well, you know, I'm too tight, I'm not going to buy it. Well, I have to buy a mobile phone. I don't want to pay for a mobile phone, but I do.
Yep.
Because I have to. So, you know, why are you excluded?
Lastly, you've got quite a young boy, so I'm hoping you've got parents grandparents around. Are they fairly computer savvy, your grandparents or your parents?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The parents definitely are, and they embrace it and they do it because they know that they have to. It's moving with the times, isn't it? And even, you know, through the decades, we've had to adapt to new ways of communicating.
Yep.
So it just feels that it's really annoying. I mean, when we kind of think about where money is being spent in this country, I do agree that it is being spent in the wrong place. And where the NHS is concerned, you know, it's not just about asylum seekers. Although, you know, I do believe that the migration in this country is too big. Sorry, I'm going off on another topic.
That's all right. No, it's related.
It's
related to hospital provision, of course it is.
Well, I mean, it's not just interpretation, it's also about, transport and transporting people. You know, again, it's down to that level of entitlement. And if the indigenous population keep going on with the, I'm entitled to this, I'm entitled to that, I'm entitled to the other, well, no wonder, you know, an asylum seeker is going to look at this country and go, well, great.
Thanks, Jane. Really enjoyed our conversation. Best wishes to parents and grandparents. Moving back to building, Maggie says, if the planning permission responsibility was taken away from local councils and committees, the problem would be solved. They always refuse everything because they wanted to get voted in by the constituents at the next election. Steve says, building faster comes from using building homes off-site in factories. UK tried. We lost lots of money trying to do modular homes. That's not the answer. Samantha's in New Malden on this. What is the answer, Samantha? Why would it appear we're so far behind, or the government is so far behind on its targets? Good morning.
I'm just thinking about council houses because...
Oh, they're a thing of the past, I think, Samantha, aren't they?
No, they're not. They're not. They're not when families are struggling, when we need to help families. They're not a thing of the past when we need to help families.
The point I'm making is that we don't seem to be building them anymore.
No, and we've got the figures. MPs have got the figures to say we've, in the last, 30 years, we haven't built enough. And it could help people at a time where they're struggling at the moment. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, it could. But they, unfortunately, the building programme was radically halted under Margaret Thatcher, and no government since has ever tried to
it's
ramp it up.
It's not a thing of the past.
Right.
We could build some. I really do think we
No, I know, but what I'm saying is they're not building them. That's the problem. They don't seem to have
We need to build them. You know, and a lot of people listening to me now, and I think there's a lot of people out there that will agree on that. There are people struggling. We need to build some.
Yes. Do you live in council-provided accommodation then?
No, I'm living with my mum.
Ah, but that would be something that you would want if you could, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Samantha, thank you. More council homes. It's, of course, the economics, sadly. That is why, unfortunately, there isn't the provision that is required for folks such as yourself. It's coming up on 3 minutes before nine the time. Come back to this idea of online hospitals. Now, if you weren't listening, we had the Health Secretary on, Wes Streeting, at the top of the hour. He talked about provision, particularly in services such as prostate for men, in menopause issues for women, UTIs, urinary tract infection, endometriosis, that you would now be radically and swiftly moved through the system, effectively by an online hospital. Initially, quite a lot of reluctance or negative reaction, although Jane perhaps embracing the other side of this. Tristan in Southend, where are you? Good, bad or indifferent? Good morning.
Hello, my friend. I think it's brilliant news. I really do.
Ah,
now,
good.
Believe it or not,
encouraged by this. Yes, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I don't know why people are complaining. I'm registered blind, and I had to learn my life over all over again 2 years ago.
Right.
And if I can use an app, anybody can.
Right.
Believe it or not.
Can I ask how you went? You weren't born blind then.
That's correct, I wasn't. I have epilepsy and had a big accident two years back, just before Christmas.
Oh,
that's all right, life's good. I have a good life now, so that's all
good.
Well, I'll get on with it. Yeah, so
what do you put your positive attitude down to? Is that mum and dad? Is that siblings? Is that school? Is that mates? Why are you so positive?
I'll be honest with you, I was on my own, and I said to myself, let's make this an adventure. Let's make it fun. Because if I hadn't, I would have cracked and fallen apart. And I've carried that with me to this day since it happened. Just learn life over, start again, and just have some fun about it. Learn to make it fun.
And this
That's
was,
all you
did
can
you,
do.
Yes, indeed, sir. This was, did you say, a couple of years ago, Tristan?
It was 2 days before Christmas, 2 years ago.
What happened?
So I've just had my second anniversary. So I had an epileptic seizure. That's been a problem since I was 15.
Right.
And unfortunately, I landed face flat on the road in the I don't want to go too gory because it can't be broadcast in daytime, but
well, credit to you. What was the biggest hurdle you've had to clear over the last two and a bit years then, would you say, Tristan?
Oh, learning how to use a guide cane to find my way around. That's been tricky.
Must be such a challenge. Well, credit to you, and I love your attitude to life. Well done, sir. Be well. Kat points out the idea of taking on new technology and challenges. The first iPhone was launched in 2007, nearly 20 years ago, says Kat. It's hardly new. Somewhere in their 60s now would have been in their 40s, 70s in their 50s. Hardly an excuse to claim they can't use technology. My dad's 95. He has no problem with tech. Good point you make, Kat. Coming up after the news, speaking of the older generation, drivers over 70 to face compulsory eyesight tests. Dr. Adrian Jones is an optician. He says,
I'm sure there are a significant number of people out in the on the road who don't have regular eye tests and don't realise that their eyesight is below the driving standards.
Plus, why have people fallen out of love with Stonewall? It's plunged into the red, funding from the public sector and businesses has wilted, and the LGBT advocacy group's income has fallen by almost 50%. What lies behind people falling out of love with Stonewall? Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is
Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. President Trump has reiterated that he is in charge of Venezuela and has ruled out a snap election. He says Venezuela must be nursed back to health first, but insisted that the US is not at war with the country. The ousted leader, Nicolas Maduro, pleaded not guilty to drug charges in New York last night after being seized by US forces at the weekend. The former Conservative Defence Secretary to Ben Wallace has told Nick the shift in America's national security policy is deeply concerning.
I think overall we're in a very dangerous territory. And a hemisphere view of the world, e.g. we control the Western Hemisphere, it's our backyard, that's exactly the same as President Putin. That's not the same as how we function in Britain or Europe or indeed until now NATO, but fundamentally that is a big shift and that's a worry.
Sir Keir Starmer is to join European leaders in France later for talks on Ukraine's peace deal. The French President Emmanuel Macron will host around 30 allies of the so-called Coalition of the Willing. It's expected that they'll also raise Donald Trump's military action in Venezuela and his desire to take control of Greenland.
The Health Secretary has told LBC the new online hospital service in England will fast-track care and cut wait times. Wes Streeting says patients will be able to speak to doctors over an upgraded NHS app from next year. Severe menopause and endometriosis are among the conditions that will be prioritised. But speaking to Nick, Mr. Streeting insisted that technology won't replace face-to-face healthcare.
It might be about ease and convenience. It might be about better productivity, freeing up staff time so they're not spending loads of time on admin or form filling. Also, it frees up clinicians' time to do the things that really matter when it comes to patient care. So I see technology as an assistant, as a co-pilot, as an enabler, rather than as a replacement, certainly in health and social care.
Mandatory eye tests for drivers over the age of 70 may be introduced as part of new road safety measures. Cognitive tests for older motorists could also be considered as part of the government's new safety strategy. The plans, due to be published tomorrow, aim to cut road deaths by 65% by 2035. And Australia reached the close of play on the third day of the final Ashes test against England on 518-7. It means the hosts have a first innings lead of 134 runs in Sydney. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 53 points at 10,056. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather, staying very cold but dry for most today. Snow showers continuing across central and northern England and the west of Scotland, with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with them this afternoon.
Specsavers, your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine, Tuesday, January the 6th. Tightening up driving and driving regulation. Older drivers, eyesight tests, alcohol limits could be tightened. Penalty points given for not wearing seatbelts. Improved road safety dramatically is what they say. What do you say is the reality? Plus, stonewalling, stonewalled. The charity has just £92,000 left in its reserves. Yes, we could all happily do with £92,000 if we suddenly found it. But the drop in income has been marked. Sir Ian McKellen voiced a promotional video to mark its 30th anniversary back in 2019.
The fight for equality is far from over. Until there is acceptance without exception for every lesbian, gay, bi and trans person, we will not stop.
What a voice. I could listen to him read the Yellow Pages. What's the Yellow Pages? Ask your grandparents or your parents, they'll know. Plus!
I've lost 5 stone after injecting Manjaro. However, I'm now £2,500 in debt. I'm Emma Donaldson, and I'll be talking to Nick about this later in the show.
Known as the fat jab. Be honest, over the Christmas and New Year period, if you were socialising, you must have found one of your family or one of your friends who suddenly they weren't having extra turkey or they were having no Christmas pudding or brandy butter or whatever it might be. Why? Were they honest? Did they say, because I'm on Wegovy, Ozempic, Mounjaro? Oh, no, I'm just eating carefully. What has the impact been? We'll look at that later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let's start from the very beginning, as they once said. Everybody wants the roads to be safer. I drive on them. You, probably many of you, are driving on them even as we speak. My children drive on them. My grandchildren, we want them to be safer. But how far do we go? How much of an issue, by the way, are older drivers? They could face eyesight tests. I'll give you more details in a moment. Alcohol limits could be tightened. It'd be difficult to argue with that, I would have thought. Although we do need to find out, what is it equivalent of now? Is it a half of lager? Is it one and a half glasses, normal-sized glasses of white wine? What is it that you sort of should stop? We will find out for you. Not wearing seatbelts, getting penalty points? Of course you should wear your seatbelt. Would you get points on it? Justice Minister Alex Davis-Jones explained why the government could bring in these plans.
This is the biggest shake-up to our driving laws for decades, and that's because this is what the public have been telling us that they want. They want us to be taking action. They feel like the time is right for us to review these laws because they haven't been reviewed in such a long time, and this is just one element of that.
It's being hailed as the biggest set of reforms since the Road Safety Act came in under Tony Blair. That was in 2006, so it is, isn't it? 20 years. And the government, well, they cite it's what the public want. Is it what you want? More eye tests every 3 years for the age of 70? But they're trying to tackle some pretty horrific statistics. In 2024, the last year for which figures are available, 1,633 people lost their lives in what are called RTAs, or road traffic accidents. Nearly 28,000 were seriously injured. That's a rate of a casualty about every 18 minutes. 24% of car drivers killed were those aged 70 or older. 12% of all casualties in car crashes involved older drivers. Let's turn to Edmund King, president of the AA, who is featured in the newspaper coverage of this story, joins me now. OK, broadly speaking, good to see you on, Edmund. Where do you and where does the organisation stand on this? Morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. I think road safety is incredibly important. The figures you gave, 1,633 deaths a year, if that happened on the railways, if that happened on the airlines, there would be an outcry, there'd be public inquiries, there would be action. So I think it is very positive that the government is coming out with a road safety strategy that also includes targets to reduce road deaths. You know, without targets, it's very difficult. In any business, you need to have targets. So I think generally in terms of that, with four people a day killed on the roads, we really do need action. And, you know, I guess some of the things they're addressing is older drivers, as you'd mentioned, with eyesight tests. Now, if you look at the graph of road deaths, it's a U graph. So at the left-hand side, it's 17 to 21-year-olds mm-hmm. who are at risk. And that's mainly due to inexperience, taking risks, country roads, mobile phones, all of that. And then at the other extreme, from the age of 70, it starts going up, but at 85 to 86 years of age, it really peaks. And in that proportion of those older drivers, eyesight has been an issue, and there have been a number of fatalities caused by older drivers not passing an eyesight test.
Let's be candid, Edmund. You and I have known each other a few years. We're nearer the 17 age bracket than indeed, we are the 17 indeed. To 21. Look, I hear what you say about 85 and above, but gosh, many 70-year-olds are pretty handy behind the wheel, and I would suggest, by and large, possibly because of years of experience, make better drivers than typically the tearaway lad in his late teens. Surely there's some truth to that, Edmund.
Well, yeah, there is some truth to that. But I think when you look at eyesight tests, medical professionals and indeed opticians say that everyone should have an eyesight test every 2 or 3 years. And quite often an eyesight test can actually bring up other medical problems that your GP hasn't picked up. Over the age of 60, eyesight tests are free. So I actually think saying for people 70 or over, having an eyesight test every 2 or 3 years is not a great inconvenience, and it should be done anyway. And we would actually say to other drivers, you know, in your 40s, in your 50s, whatever, you should also be having eyesight tests. So I think that one, you know, definitely is a step in the right direction.
What about alcohol?
Yeah, I mean, alcohol is an interesting one, because when you actually study road deaths caused by alcohol, it tends to be someone who's way over the limit, not just over or just under. It tends to be twice the legal limit. And in terms of that, you need police to target them. Reducing the limit to 50 from 80 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres of blood, that's what they did in Scotland, and if you look at Europe, most of Europe is at 50. I think it will send out a stronger message. I mean, we always say at the AA, it is really difficult, Nick, to work out what you can drink. It depends.
I mean, the Times reports that makes about one pint of beer on the borderline.
Yeah.
But it's down to body weight, isn't it, of course?
Yeah, exactly, Nick. Males, females, different. Yeah, and no, but things like mood as well. Apparently mood affects how you consume alcohol, how it goes through you. Mm. So, you know, the best advice really is if you're going to drink, don't drive, and if you're going to drive, don't drink.
Lastly, briefly, if you would, because I have a medical professional get to, Edmund, penalty points for not wearing your seatbelt.
Yeah, the AA Charitable Trust, we had a campaign about this last year, and the figures just amazed me. Something like 30% of people killed in car crashes aren't belted up. That is crazy. So, yes, making the driver responsible for themselves and their occupants and giving penalty points, that is absolute common sense.
I've got to say, I love your broadcast setup there at the AA. You look like Chris Kamara coming into Sky Sports with the latest results.
I was trying to be Sir Ian McKellen.
We'd all be Sir Ian McKellen. Yeah, exactly. Edmund, Happy New Year. Look after yourself. I'm sure we'll talk again soon. Edmund King, President of the AA, who referenced some medical professionals. Let's get one on board. Daniel Hardman McCartney is clinical advisor of the College of Optometrists. At what age do you think people, particularly drivers, should start having routine eye tests? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. We welcome these proposals from the government, have been talking to the Department of Transport and DVLA about these. We recommend all adults should be having regular eye examinations to ensure their eyes are healthy and people can see well. And this really goes back to the coroner's report that was published earlier on this year in April, which found there are a number of deaths on the road due to people not having adequate eyesight. And it was indeed avoidable if we had mandated these sight tests so people knew whether their eyes met the standards or not and could see safely to be able to drive.
My other contributor mentioned that you and your colleagues in this field can pick up other conditions, not just how good my eyesight is. What are the other conditions that you might be able to look at?
That's right, Nick. So you'll be surprised to know just by looking inside the eye, you can see things like high blood pressure, like diabetes. So it really is a full health check. And those things can affect your fitness to drive as well. So there's really wider public health benefits from this. So not only will people have the reassurance to know what they meet the required standard to be safe to drive, but actually that they've got healthy eyes and all general health problems are picked up. But also by having the sight tests early, and we know that there may be 10-15% of people who are not having those regular sight tests or self-certifying that they're safe to drive without really knowing it, they may be able to be prescribed glasses, referred for cataract, or even with conditions like glaucoma, get it detected and treated before it affects their ability to drive. So it may actually keep people on the road longer and safer from the outset. So a really good set of proposals, sensible and proportionate.
Lastly, what is the measure at which you and your colleagues would start to have concerns? How poor or failing would eyesight be and to what level?
Yeah, Nick, so it's a really good point. So we're not proposing, and these proposals do not propose changing the level of vision that's currently, it's still existing standard, and it's a line on chart where you can see a number plate at about 20 metres. And so when people can't see a number plate at about 20 metres, which actually is, people might be quite surprised, it's really quite low down the test chart.
I thought it was going to be much worse than that, Daniel.
So actually it is quite a low standard compared to some other countries in the world. But there's not a change. So it's really reassuring to your listeners that actually it's not overnight suddenly that people are going to find that there's a change in the goalposts and people need to stop driving. It's just enforcing the current standard and ensuring people know properly whether they meet that standard or not.
Daniel Hardman McCartney, thank you. You're clinical advisor of the College of Optometrists, and now over to you. The government minister saying, "So this is a response to public opinion or public requests." Have you been asking for more eye tests for people of 70, or indeed the idea of tightening alcohol restrictions and penalty points for not wearing your seat belt? Also, after the news, Stonewall, they're running out of cash. Sir Ian McKellen speaking in a promotional video back in 2014 about his experience of coming out as a gay man.
And yet there was something missing in that I hadn't told every member of my family, and I hadn't been prepared to talk, as I am now, to the media about being gay.
Always loves to talk while playing the piano, Sir Ian. Can't help himself. 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump says the United States must nurse Venezuela back to health before an election can be held there. Sir Keir Starmer is to join European leaders in France later for talks on Ukraine's peace deal.
And the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has told LBC that plans for a new online hospital service won't replace face-to-face healthcare in England. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most, patchy snow showers for central northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 clockwise to junction 10 at the A3. It's following an accident where one lane is closed, and then also on the M25, but on the northern stretch there are delays anti-clockwise from junction 25 at the A10 to 24 at Porter's Barn. That was after a lorry broke down earlier. Very busy on the M20 eastbound to junction 5 at the Aylesford interchange, and that's because a car has broken down. On the trains, these big problems at Paddington do continue. Heathrow Express, Great Western Railway and also Elizabeth Line services are severely disrupted because of the overhead wires. And also on the underground, the Piccadilly Line can't run between Cockfosters and Arnos Grove.
This is LBC.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. Probably will need some 2x4s. I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love. And it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
Hello, this is Mummy's phone. We're on holiday with an amazing beach. She's asked me to record her voicemail because she said if anyone hears the way I pronounce Menorca, they'll agree how important it is that we spend time together. Undisturbed.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Lorraine, going to talk to you about driving tests. You've seen a documentary about that. Just do some of the social media. Let's do a full stop. I'm sure some of my colleagues will take on the idea of online hospitals. Paul in Cornwall, I don't agree with the optimism regarding online. It's like the triage system in A&E, which on paper seems excellent. However, I just think it's a tick-box exercise whereby you get a quick initial appointment, which helps with the NHS statistics. And on the subject of housing, Mikey, you and I were watching the same movie over Christmas. I always watch it. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang came on and Mikey was watching. He said, we decided to look up the windmill site used in the film. It's so extraordinary. I saw that. I think it was in Buckinghamshire, that windmill, but don't quote me. Guess how much it's worth? £9 million. It went on the market a year ago. That's that great aerial shot right at the end of the film where Caractacus Potts, Dick Van Dyke and is it Truly Scrumptious take off and you have the aerial shot of that windmill. 9 million quid somewhere in Buckinghamshire, but I don't know where. Lorraine is in Raynham in Essex and is going to talk to you about driving. What did you see on the telly then? Good morning.
Hello. Happy New Year anyway.
There's
a programme called Cause of Death, which is a documentary. Mm. And one particular episode is called License to Kill, which focused on people's eyesight. And what it showed was that the opticians do test people's eyesight, but it is up to the driver to report themselves to DVLA.
Oh.
So that it's their option to decide not to drive. Now, it should be the other way around. If an optician sees that you can't see 2 metres in front of you, they should report you.
Now, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm really, really angry that that's the way it was. But hopefully this new law will come into effect and show this, because there were people... they investigated people's deaths.
Yeah.
And one of the drivers couldn't see the steering wheel in front of him, yet he was a delivery driver.
So a coroner's report from last year, Lorraine, says there's been a 70% collapse of drivers self-reporting for conditions of diabetic retinopathy, cataracts, glaucoma, and macular degeneration. So, to your point, Lorraine, it is found out, and then no one tells that they don't tell the relevant authorities, and they carry on driving.
Yes, therefore they are driving, basically a lethal weapon.
Well, also, you'd thought they're breaching their insurance terms. If you're knowingly getting in a car and you're medically unfit to drive and you're legal in general or Aviva or something, you'd have a view on that, I would have thought, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but there's people who seem to take it that they're going to lose their livelihood.
Yeah. How many deaths did you say there were on that documentary you saw?
They investigated four, and it was very, very in-depth about how they... Yeah. It was very interesting, but it brought to light this fact that it's the driver who should report their eyesight.
Got it. Which is a bigger problem, do you think? We talk about this U-curve, the young drivers 17 to 21, and then those home there 80 and 85 and above. Which is a bigger menace, would you say?
I think it's the younger ones, basically because they've got to learn to pay for the damage they cause. It's like, you know, as you get older, you realise, okay, if I hit my wheel against the curb, that's a new wheel. And that's where you sort of think, oh, okay, everything costs something. And that's what the younger people don't realise until they've got to start paying.
Well, we all think we're immortal when we're young, don't we? Lorraine, thanks for the input from that documentary they watched. Have a good day. Jag's in Shipley. Jag, you're in this field, are you? You're an optometrist. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Nick?
Good, thank you. I think my eyes are okay. I'll probably hand you a check-up. Jag, do you think that there should be, you and your colleagues should be mandated to tell the DVLA if you have a driver who has poor vision?
Well, at the moment, your previous caller is correct. We don't have the authority to tell the DVLA that, you know, someone is not allowed to drive. That has to go back to the patient themselves. So, to answer your question, it's a tricky one because, you know, we cannot tell anyone without that person's authority about their medical history and their medical status.
Have you had instances where someone has presented themselves for a test, you've tested them and there's no way on earth that they should be getting behind the wheel, and you know they're not going to do it? Oh, yes, don't worry, doctor. Yeah, I'll tell them. And you know they won't.
It happens. It does happen. And it's one of those things where you can advise somebody, but to actually force them to do something about it, it has to be on them. Most of the time, they do tell the DVLA. The problem you've got, Nick, is half the problem with some of the information out there, it's a little bit nuanced. So, for example, macular degeneration, if you look at the DVLA guidelines, there's nothing in the DVLA guidelines that states specifically that you should tell the DVLA about macular degeneration. However, when I've spoken to the DVLA about this, I've said, look, I've got customers and patients here that come in with this condition. And we ask them, say, look, should they be telling the DVLA about this condition? They specifically state, well, if it's in one eye and it only affects one eye and it's not affecting the other eye, then no. If it's affecting both eyes, then yes. So it's like, well, where do the criteria hit? So and what are the guidelines? Because it's not very specific and the communication lines are very blurred.
Lastly, Jag, seeing a number plate or license plate from 20 metres, 20 yards, that doesn't seem unreasonable. That was what my other contributor said. Would you agree with that?
I think 20 metres is fine. I mean, from an eye test perspective, we use something called a Snellen chart. So 6-12...
Say that again. A what chart? Sorry?
A Snellen chart. So it's the visual eye test, where you're reading the letters?
Big C's and M's and God knows what else, and then it gets smaller and smaller,
So it gets up to a certain criteria, and they stay around 6-12, which is the line, about four lines above 20/20 vision. Where they state that's what you should be able to see. So 20 and a half metres away, a number plate... Go on.
Sorry, it just popped. Did I say that out loud? All your experience that you've done, Jag...
Yes.
What is the letter people most often get wrong? What is the most... Is it like the difference between a P and an R? Or what is it?
It's usually either E or... and they mistake it for a B.
Yeah, of course.
Or they mistake a H for an A.
An H, how interesting. And that's when you know someone maybe have an issue.
Possibly. But again, there's several factors to consider, because lighting makes a difference.
Yes.
Contrast makes a difference. People will struggle more at certain lighting levels in the day. Macular degeneration can have a difference. And then it just goes back to the point where, you talk about the... And it's, sorry, go on.
No, I've got another question. Do your eyes get tired during the day? So if I've had an eye... if I need an eye test, is it better to rock up at 10:30 in the morning than 4:30 in the afternoon?
Not necessarily. No. I mean, your functionality of your eyes should really be consistent throughout the day. You'll have varying times and varying fatigue, and there are certain health conditions that can affect that, of course. But lighting does make a difference. So when you're in a test room, we try and make the environment as standardized as possible. So you've got certain lighting levels, certain visual levels, so we can try and make it as consistent as we can.
How many years did you train for the job, Jack?
You have to do A-levels first, going to university, 3 years at university, 1 year qualifying under the College of Optometrists, and a pre-reg year, and then you become an optometrist. So I've been practicing since 2006, a qualified optometrist, 20 years, I've been doing this.
Fascinating. Jack, do stay in touch. Really enjoyed our conversation. Got to move on because I've got someone waiting to talk about something else. Have yourself a good day. Thanks, Jack. Let's come to another story. And I will find any excuse just to listen to this great actor's great voice.
The fight for equality is far from over. Until there is acceptance without exception for every lesbian, gay, bi and trans person, we will not stop.
The great Sir Ian McKellen voicing a promotional video for Stonewall. That was its 30th anniversary back in 2019. Now we read that it's dived into the red. Funding from the public sector and businesses has not dried up, but has considerably wilted. Their income has fallen by around 50%. They have £91,811 in the bank, which would do most of us. Lewis Oakley is a broadcaster, LGBT plus campaigner, co-hosts the Bisexual Brunch podcast, and joins me now. Good to have you on, Lewis. I'm going to say something. If you think I'm wrong, don't shout at me, but is it perhaps because the job is done? Acceptance is there. Stonewall has led a complete transformation about how people view homosexuals and lesbian women and bis. So that's why they don't need the cash. Lewis.
I don't think we're quite there. I would love to be there. And I think that it's easy for us maybe in our cities to think, well, there's not a problem. What's going on? But, you know, around the country and in other countries as well, there is a lot to be yearned for. And I think as well, you know, we've especially seen a lot on the trans stuff. But even now, the public opinion seems to be going a little bit backwards. And I understand we're not America. But you look over at America, they sneeze, we get a cold. There's conversations there about, well, should we really have equal marriage? It almost seems like there's a bit of it's coming around. And also there's stuff that Stonewall in all their great years, you know, never did anything on. They, you know, bisexuals, for example, make up over half of all people that identify as LGBT. Funding for bisexual issues really in the toilet. And really, because it's not a dramatic thing where people are being beaten up on a bus about it, those issues kind of go under the radar. And so the mental health statistics and things like that. So there's lots more they could do. Their job is not done.
Okay, what is the difference then between being a gay man or a lesbian woman in, say, London or in the wilds of Lincolnshire?
Well, I think we've seen, there was a case I got asked about the other day where someone was using derogatory terms to describe gay people, didn't see the issue with it. So there's those kind of things. I think we see more and more of, I think in London, there's just more, you wouldn't bat an eyelid at a gay couple walking past. Whereas I think some, and I'm not, you know, trying to be mean about other places. There's lots of very accepting places and people around the country. But, you know, there are places where you probably think twice before holding your boyfriend's hand.
So the war is not won, but we're making advances in the right direction, right?
I would like to think that. I do, honestly. I feel the temperature of the nation, right? In the sense of, look, the DEI stuff is being rolled back again, coming from America, but coming over here. A lot of international companies saying, well, we don't really need a Stonewall's workplace program, or we don't really need a DEI policy, whatever. I kind of feel like even in the culture, you know, using gay as a derogatory term is creeping back in a little bit. So I don't know. And obviously we've had all these debates over trans people. Mm-hmm. That has been so divisive. And has alarmed a lot of people. And a lot of gay... I was speaking to a couple of gay people the other day on my podcast, and there's a lot of gay people now that say, oh, I just don't want to be involved in this. I just want to be gay. I'm fine. Kind of like what you're saying. I feel like the battle's won.
Yeah.
What do I care about trans people? What do I care about all this other stuff? It's nothing to do with me. Whereas it is, because it's all intertwined.
All right, Lewis, thanks for your time. Lewis Oakley, you're a broadcaster, LGBT plus campaigner. You co-host the Bisexual Brunch podcast. If you are gay, a lesbian woman, if you're bi, I note what he's just said, by the way, about bi folk, but do you think the battle's been won effectively? Therefore, you don't want any more advocacy. You don't want this organisation. You just want to live as a gay man. It's thank you for all the campaigning the predecessors have done, and Sir Ian McKellen, who co-founded it with Michael Cashman and others. Michael Cashman, of course, the actor. But that's been won. We'll look at that after the news. Plus,
I've lost 5 stone after injecting Manjaro. However, I'm now £2,500 in debt. I'm Emma Donaldson, and I'll be talking to Nick about this later in the show.
£70 in weight gone, if I've got my sums wrong. Right, 5 times 14, 54, 5, yeah. £70 down in weight, £2,500 down at the bank. A price worth paying? You're listening to Nick Ferrari at breakfast here on LBC. The news headlines at 9:32. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has said there's no way that Venezuela can hold elections to replace Nicolas Maduro. The ousted leader pleaded not guilty to drug charges in New York last night after being seized by US forces at the weekend. Talks are due to take place in Paris between Ukraine and its allies later to discuss security guarantees in the event of a peace deal with Russia. The US is sending President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Special Envoy Steve Witkoff to the meeting. And NHS England has announced that people will be able to use an online hospital from next year to speak to specialists. The service will be an option after a referral from a GP. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most today. Patchy snow showers for central and northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on. What about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
What would you do if you found a way to make endless money? In a damp flat in Blackpool, James Parker did just that. He discovered a way to make Bitcoin out of thin air and it made him rich beyond his wildest dreams. But that's when the trouble started. Join me, Lewis Goodall, for my new podcast, Coining It, the true story of a man who found a crack in the system and created a fortune that tore lives apart. Listen for free on Global Player, download it from the App Store or head to globalplayer.com.
I've looked after my kids since they were born. Now they've got kids. I still want to look after them. I don't want them struggling to make decisions about my money or my health if I can't. So we made a lasting power of attorney. Now, if I can't speak for myself, they'll speak for me. It's a weight off for all of us, isn't it?
Yes, Mum.
Lasting power of attorney. Search your voice, your decision.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 606093.
Come to more of your calls concerning driving tests in a moment. Sue, Matt, you are at the top of the queue. Now, my staff, my colleagues, often laugh at me. There are many reasons. One of which is that when I leave the office, I always have a roll of newspapers tucked under my arm. And then when I'm in the car or on the train or whatever, I read the what are called the features pages, because I have to read the news pages, obviously. I don't have to. I enjoy reading the news pages so that I can try and present to you roughly what's happening in the world, and then I take my time reading the feature pages. And it was one I read, actually from last week, which really caught my eye. With a very punchy headline, my 2,500 Manjaro debt keeps me awake at night, but there's no way I'll give up the jabs. And saying that is my next guest, Emma Donaldson, who joins me now. Morning, Emma. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. You take a great photograph in the Daily Mail on, I think it was last Friday I read this. You look great in that blue suit. Congratulations. Tell the listeners how much weight you lost. And where was the Damascene moment? Where was the moment you thought, up with this, I will not put, I'm going to try and explore Wegovy, Mounjaro, Ozempic, whatever.
Well, the moment that I felt like that was actually on my birthday. I caught sight of myself in a full-length mirror and I was horrified. I could not believe that I'd let myself get to that point. I was 18 stone and I just thought, right, you know, you can change or you can carry on. And that's when I started exploring the options.
An 18 stone, so just bearing in mind men will be listening, that's probably going to put you in a 24 size dress. Is that right? Roughly?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm tall, but really it was getting out of hand.
Well, there's a photograph of you, obviously, that I'm looking at. You were perhaps carrying, a little bit of timber, as I think they say.
Was.
So how did you explore the jabs?
Well, I just looked at it online, and the different manufacturers came up, and then you can read a lot about it now. And, of course, there's a lot in the media, so yeah. It was relatively easy to research.
What's the process? Presumably you have to get your doctor, he or she has to sign off on this, do they?
No.
Ah.
No.
Oh. How do you do it? How is it done then?
You approach the people you want to buy the jabs from, and you need to send photographs and to say what your weight is, and then they approve it. I did let my doctor know, and they were interested.
What do you mean by interested, Emma? They said, what, keep us posted or something?
Because they have asked me to lose weight. Mm. So I think it was nice for me to bring something to the table.
Okay. So when was this that you started to look at getting the jabs?
July.
And why did you pick... Did you try the others or did you go straight for Mounjaro? What was it that persuaded you to take that one?
I went straight for Mounjaro and it's been an excellent first rate.
And what sort of dosage are you on?
I'm on the highest dosage now. You start at the lower dosage, which I think is really advantageous because it gets you used to any side effects. I was fine, but it certainly is reassuring that you know that you're approaching it gradually.
Your Daily Mail article is pretty revealing. You say that you'd been a beanpole as a teenager. You're 5 foot. I've got here that you're 5'11". What size were you as a teenage girl then, Emma?
About size 12.
Were you now? Okay. Yeah. So you started taking the jabs, what, in July, August?
Yes.
What was your initial reaction? You can get nausea or actual vomiting at times.
No, I was absolutely fine, but that's not necessarily the case for everybody because it's hormones, and I don't think we really know exactly how they, you know, I certainly don't know how they work.
No.
So I'd just say to anybody, it's not an automatic fix. It was very easy for me, but that might not be the case for everybody. I was absolutely fine.
And what happens? You just don't want food? You feel full? How would you describe it, Emma?
Yeah, you just don't want food. And because I used to be, and this is true of a lot of people who've had problems with food, that you think about it 24/7, even when you don't realise that you're thinking about it, you're thinking about your next meal. Even when you're not hungry, even when you've eaten really well and all things that you like. And it just stops that. And then it's hard to believe it's the same person that could polish off a whole pizza. Now, I had quite a lot yesterday, actually, because I had half a pizza yesterday, but that was a whole day. And it is cold. It is cold.
You had half a cold pizza for an entire day.
It is. The weather's cold.
Oh, it's cold. I meant the pizza was cold. It's freezing. You're in Leicester, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, I watched a bit of the football last night. It looked absolutely chilling up there for those guys. Horrific.
It is.
Right, now we've got a problem. You're in debt.
Yes, I have, but I tend to think of it as like a second mortgage or if you needed money for a car. Mm. And I really do feel that, because I'm spending a lot less on food. And I think as well that sometimes, especially at this time of year, people can spend money on gym memberships, go twice, and then that can also be money that they don't have any purchase over. So I definitely think it's a good option. And you do, as I say, spend less on food.
Do you mind my asking, how much does your Mounjaro cost you a month or however you buy it?
It has gone up now. It's about £250 a month.
250 quid a month. What? Oh, right. So
yes.
When did it go up?
It went up. Now you're asking me. I think it was the beginning of September.
Was it a big jump then? Did it?
It about doubled. Good, I think, Lord. It was doubled and a bit more.
Is that because it's so popular and they can charge so much for it, do you imagine?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. It's a lot more in other countries.
Is it?
In other
Can you imagine life without Manjaro?
I don't want to go back to that person, because it really did affect me. I've done it all, cried in public, you know, sat and given up on myself and all that. So I just don't want to go back to that.
And are you happy now, or do you want to try and get more weight off?
I want to, so I'm down now to 13 stone. I want to go down to 11 stone, which is what I was 30 years ago.
Oh, my God. You'll have to give up, have to have a quarter of a pizza on a cold day. That's the only way we're going. Right, well, we need to make some money. Now, what's this artspur.com? Artspur.com. What's that all about?
Yeah, artspur.com. That's the website where I exhibit my art. So I'd say to you folks listening, if you're interested in art, please do come along. It's Emma Donaldson at artspur.com. Now, that's the website
spur,
is...
Just to clarify, that's art, and then spur is spelled Sierra... Papa Echo Romeo, S-P-E-R.
Right, yes.
Yeah, not like Tottenham Hotspurs. Yeah, have I got that right?
S-P-E-R. Now, the website is in French, mon ami, but you can click to have it in English.
Sacre
you can,
bleu. I can't read French. What is your art, then? What do you do?
It's abstract. It's big, colourful, chunky, abstract. Also, very, very light.
Is it a touch of the Jackson Pollocks?
Yes, and people have said Jackson Pollock.
That's for the Pollock.
That's what they said.
Oh, here we go. Colleagues just get it up. Oh, right, okay. Looks like one of those biological washing powders or something like that. There's all colours are going on there. Emma, great speaking with you. Good luck. Artspur.com. Emma Donaldson is the artist involved, and that weight loss, keep it off. Gosh, by the way, over the Christmas holiday period, did you sit down for Christmas lunch and suddenly Uncle... Granddad, auntie, no potatoes. What? No, I won't have any potatoes. I'm dieting. No, you're not. You're on the chab. Just be honest about it. I take an injection because it stops me wanting food. What's the problem? Well, of course, is that you? Might talk about that, but Sue's in Oxford, hang on the line to talk about driving tests. We're talking about your dad. What happened to your father? Oh, dear. He was in his late 70s. What happened? Sue, good morning.
Yes, hi, good morning. Yeah, no, my father was 78. He passed away in 2009.
Right.
So he was walking across a road, doing everything he should have done, looked both ways, etc. And he was knocked over by an elderly gentleman who was, I think he's in his early 80s. And my father spent 9 weeks in hospital and never recovered. Yeah, it was horrific, actually, and turned out that the gentleman who knocked him over he had macular degeneration. He shouldn't have been driving. He said he didn't see my father, and there were lots of eyewitnesses that saw my father cross the road and gave evidence to the police, and they all said my father did everything he should have done, and there's just no way this gentleman couldn't have seen him. So, you know, this happened in Stody Hall in the West Midlands. And initially the CPS said there was no crime, there was nothing to see here. It was just a very bad accident.
So,
and I pushed it through with the CPS and got the chief prosecutor involved. And it went through the court, went through Warwick Crown Court, and eventually the gentleman was brought to justice. And he got a 2-year suspended sentence. And I just want to say, it wasn't about sending this man to prison. He didn't go to prison. It wasn't anything like that. This was an elderly gentleman. It was really just to make sure that this gentleman did not, you know, that he couldn't be driving around anymore that when he couldn't see what he was doing. And so it became a bit of a landmark case. It was pretty awful.
So just to clarify, did you get your dad out of hospital, or he never came out of hospital?
No, he didn't come out of hospital. He spent 9 weeks there, and his injuries were so bad, he never came out again.
I note that you've called the person who hit your father, gentleman. You don't bear any ill will towards him.
Do you know, it was... I do, obviously. I mean, it was a horrific thing.
I would just hold him in utter contempt and fury.
Yeah, well, but at the time I was so angry about it, and so, and you know, I took out my anger through going through the CPS and the judicial system. But now I look at it and I think, you know, yeah, he shouldn't have been driving. And actually, if we did bring in sort of regulatory driving tests at certain ages, then hopefully that would have been, you know, that wouldn't have happened. And actually, this gentleman, it turned out he'd got two previous recent driving offences through driving through a red light and so on and so forth. And so he was just, you know, he shouldn't have been on the road.
Thank you for telling the story. I appreciate it some years ago, but you never get over losing a parent, as sadly I know. Sue, be well. Thank you. We'll continue this conversation, and we will come to the idea of Stonewall, not so much cash, but is it because the job is done? If you're a gay man, lesbian woman, we'll come back to that one too. 9:46. LBC News headlines then, Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to LBC, a cabinet minister has defended the government's refusal to criticise America's intervention in Venezuela. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to meet with European leaders later in the latest push to end the war in Ukraine. And NHS England has announced that people will be able to use an online hospital service from next year to speak to specialists. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most. Patchy snow across central and northern England and the west of Scotland. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. Where problems on the M25, the anti-clockwise entry slip road at Junction 10, so this is coming from the A3, is closed, and that's because of an accident. There are delays on the main carriageway as well from Junction 11 at Chertsey. Also on the M25, it's very busy anti-clockwise from Junction 25 at the A10 to 24 at Porter's Bar, and that's where a lorry has broken down. The A13 is partially blocked westbound just after the Pitsey flyover. It's because of an accident, and there are queues on the approach. On the trains at Paddington Station, the severe delays do continue for Great Western Railway, Heathrow Express and Elizabeth Line services because of the overhead wire problems.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Donald Trump is steering the world towards chaos while Keir Starmer is steering the UK back to Europe.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Aqua Uniprimer is made by us, Dulux Trade.
And approved by professional painters like me and you.
It's made to get a grip on all major surfaces.
From wood to metal, tiles to UPVC, inside or out. You name it, this stuff sticks.
And it's made to be recoat ready in 60 minutes.
So we can get the job done.
Dulux Trade Aqua Uniprimer. It's made by us.
And approved by you. And me.
Put it to the test. Try Dulux Trade Aqua Uniprimer today.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Now, I'm as guilty as anyone when it comes to ignoring things. Rogue grey hairs, red flags in relationships, or that service reminder on your car dash. Luckily, that one's easy. Visit Cinch for fat-free servicing at over 100 locations. Any car, whether you bought it from Cinch or not. With MOTs, $39.95 and servicing from only $129.95. To book your service or buy your next car, visit cinch.co.uk. See cinch.co.uk/servicing for details. Terms and exclusions apply.
Bye, Mum.
He didn't used to leave his room. Now we can't get him back in.
The kids keep me busy, but at least the dentist is sorted.
When this lot need help, there's always an expert waiting.
Family mental health support.
Dental appointments.
All the kids covered for the price of one. That's why I'm with Bupa. Search Bupa Health Insurance to find out more. Only pay for the eldest child up to 20 years old. New Bupa by You customers only. Pre-existing conditions not covered. Terms and conditions apply.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Matt, we're going to talk driving tests. Just want to talk about the fact that Stonewall is Stonewall. The cash is dry. It's not like it's over. They've still got more than 90 grand in the bank, but considerably less than they've had in the past. Someone who asked me not to give their name, and of course I respect that. I'm a gay man, 33. I've known my housemate for many years, over 10. Lived with him for just over 2. He's always thought I could be gay, but has never known until about a week ago when I finally came out. We live just out of London, and I work in London. I still find it difficult to come out as I'm not overly camp and wouldn't come across as you might think as a typical gay man. Thankfully, he was amazing when I told him. I think it's made our friendship a little better. The point I'm making is, yes, Stonewall has done wonders. There is still a little way to go. Lynn says Stonewall is now viewed as having lost its credibility. It's associated with training courses using misleading or sometimes illegal material. Most of all, it's too closely associated with trans. The majority of the population find that activism and the attacks on women's safety as beyond the pale. Let's talk driving tests with Matt in Catford. Matt, what do you want to tell me on that? Good morning.
Morning, sir. Happy New Year.
And to you.
Yeah, so look, I don't think the eye testing for LAPs is going far enough. Like, you want the standard of people driving on the roads has got so terrible.
Do you think
so? 15 years. I only bought a car again a couple of years ago.
Right.
And I'd lived in London for 15 years before that because, you know, living in London, you don't really need a car. You can use public transport to get anywhere 24 hours a day.
Well, I believe you.
I mean, it's never been amazing, during your driving standard, but the standard is just so bad. Okay, to get to the point, cars get MOTs every year. Why shouldn't drivers? It doesn't have to be a full driving test. Just get them doing, like, a cut-down version of the theory test.
Oh, mate, that would take forever. And the cost. They wouldn't.
No, you check your car into the MOT.
We haven't got enough driving examiners now.
You don't need...
Go ahead.
Yeah, you just need to, you know, put it into an app form through a theory test or a cut down version of the theory test every year, and it shows. Oh yes, you're on point. You're.
What if
you're
I fail?
A cognizant driver of what's.
What if I fail?
Well, no instant penalties, but like if you pass or you get a good whatever like top scores.
No penalty.
No claims discount on your insurance. Add another year on that. Have some not all stick. Give people the carrot option.
But I say again, so I take your WhatsApp point, but I fail. What do I have to do? Am I allowed back in my car, or what happens?
Yeah, but like it's noted on your insurance that you haven't passed this thing. So whether there's no instant penalty for it, you should be just rewarded for passing it.
And what sort of questions?
Giving people the incentive to take questions off the theory test. Oh. That test already exists. You don't have to give them the full works, just a cut-down version of it.
Do you know the stopping distance? Do you know the stopping distance on a rainy day in Catford doing 30 miles an hour? I can't bloody remember.
I can't remember the last time I could drive through Catford at 30 miles an hour.
By the Catford Cat. But you know the point I'm making. You're going down the A20 and you're on your way to, I don't know, Orpington, wherever you might be. I can't remember how long it takes at 40 miles an hour in a wet day for the car to come to a halt.
I mean, I had mea culpa, but I would probably also fail that question. But if you knew you had to revise for it, if you knew you had, okay, my MOT is coming up in November. In October, I'm just going to quickly get a copy of the online,
The highway code.
An online copy of the highway code, quick revision to it. Oh, yeah, stopping distances. What is this?
Can I ask you, lastly, I am of an age that I just took I'm going to call it a regular test. Did you take a theory prior to the actual driving test?
No, I passed in 1989.
Oh, right, okay, similar. And just lastly, in what way do you think driving has worsened in the time you've been without your car and you're now back on the road? People just not as observant, pulling out of junctions? What would you say it is?
All of the above. Suicidal delivery riders on scooters that just pull out, the people that just don't seem to be aware of what...
They don't seem to have any road sense, do they? Matt, safe driving, thank you. Not a million miles from where I am. We might cross each other one day by the Catford Cat. If you don't know what the Catford Cat is, it's a giant cat that is over the Catford shopping centre. Well, it used to be. I haven't been there for a while. Ian's in Erith. Ian, you're on the radio. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, back in 2010, woke up one morning. Mm. My right eye was very milky.
Oh, dear.
Got an appointment for the next day. By that time overnight, my left eye gone the same.
Oh,
now,
Lord.
Yeah, so this year was in the August, come like December, my sight has come back. Okay, but not 100% anyway. I asked.
So, what does this mean as regards driving?
Right, I asked my consultant about driving. He said, "Well," he said, "you still meet the criteria." I said, "I may meet the criteria." I said, "But I said, but I said, I'm telling you this."
Yeah. So, what did you opt to do? What did you choose to do then, Ian?
Well, like I gave it up literally.
Did. And how old were you?
At the time, I was 52.
And so now you, how is your eyesight, most importantly?
Right, I'm still down as partially sighted. Right. If it's like today, it's very bright outside, and like it's just like a black wall if I look at the...
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, but like I get by it. But like, believe it or not, I've never been asked to send my licence back. I've still got my licence, which I keep as ID.
Of course you do. Ian, very wise decision that you took. I have to let you go, Ian. Thank you. You're listening to LBC Newsbreak at this time, 9:46, and it has been reported that Chelsea, if you're a fan, has a new manager. The former head coach at Strasbourg, Liam Rosenia, I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm going to say Rosenia, hope that's right, confirming he's reached a verbal agreement to join Chelsea, and he's holding a farewell press conference at Strasbourg. So Liam Rosenia, I'm sure I'll know soon enough, has been appointed or will get the job if you are a Chelsea fan. Gosh, they get three managers up there, don't they? Peter's in Bushy Heath. Peter, your reaction to more eye tests, possibly. Good morning.
Excellent idea, I think. My experience is I was living further out in Abbots Langley.
Oh, yes, Buckinghamshire. In Buckinghamshire, I think, isn't it?
No, Hertfordshire.
Hertfordshire, my apologies. I do apologise.
Just north of Watford.
Oh, right.
And I was loving it, but I realised that I was getting to an age where I wasn't really good enough to drive. My optometrist told me that I was okay to drive, but the situation had worsened, yes. And I decided to sell my car and move.
Right.
And my son totally agreed with me. He wouldn't have let me drive anymore. And I'm now in a retirement block of flats in Bushy Heath, loving it.
Right.
I use taxis or friends to carry me around.
You don't miss the mobility at all then, Peter?
Yes, I do miss the mobility. But luckily we've got a very good bus route here.
So that all works for you. Peter, thank you. Of course, you could always do what that government advisor did and decide to go for a drive around Barnard Castle in Durham just to check their eyes. That always seems to be another way of doing it. I'm surprised that's not been put forward by the government. Apologies to Robert, Steve, to Jim and others. Done for another day. James O'Brien, of course, is going to be the other side of the news. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player or the LBC app. You can read and watch the latest from LBC. Put the news categories in the order that you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James, the other side of the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock and the questions in some ways remain the same, don't they? The UK Defence Journal reporting, I don't know quite what the word is, but the transit of US Special Operations units en route to Europe via the UK. Things are afoot, aren't they? And the moments when you realise how significant things are often arrive a little bit too late to do anything about it. Post-1945, with the formation of NATO and the essential provision of peace across a continent that had previously been ravaging itself for centuries, should be something that we all want to furiously protect. But what if the President of the US doesn't?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a cabinet minister has defended the government's refusal to criticise America's intervention in Venezuela. Sir Keir Starmer's under pressure from some of his own MPs to oppose the capture of the ousted leader Nicolas Maduro.
President Trump has reiterated overnight that the US is in charge of Venezuela and has ruled out a snap election. Speaking to LBC, the Health Secretary Wes Streeting says Sir Keir Starmer is actively trying to influence a challenging moment in global politics.
In recent days, and I've seen some of the strident criticism made of the United States action in Venezuela from colleagues who I enormously respect, and I appreciate people are saying, well, that criticism is more strident than what the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary said. Why is that? Well, that's because the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary are not commentators. They are world leaders, and they are choosing their words and their timing very carefully to try and influence things positively rather than detrimentally.
Talks are due to take place in Paris later between Ukraine's allies to discuss security guarantees in the event of a peace deal with Russia. The US is sending President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and the special envoy, Steve Witkoff, to the meeting. Cabinet ministers have been told that the government's focus is on the cost of living this year. At the first cabinet meeting of 2026, the Prime Minister said the UK is starting to turn the corner. But Sir Keir Starmer said that he wants to prove that politics can deliver by putting more money in people's pockets. The celebrity chef Tom Kerridge has told LBC that business rate hikes are unsustainable. A revaluation means many firms, including pubs, bars, and restaurants, are facing much higher bills from April. Mr. Kerridge says that his venues will see rises of more than 100%.
For my Butcher's Tap and Grill, which is a very small little pub boozer in the middle of Marlow, does burgers, fries, sport on the telly. It's not Michelin star. It's not generating huge revenues. The rates at the minute of £50,000 a year. That's going up to £124,000 a year.
Sir Keir Starmer told LBC yesterday that he is looking at further support for the sector. NHS England announced that people will be able to use an online hospital from next year to speak to specialists. The service will be an option after a referral from a GP. Severe menopause and endometriosis are among the conditions that will also be prioritised. And it's understood Liam Rossini has verbally agreed to become the new manager of Chelsea Football Club. Rossini is currently the head coach of the French side Strasbourg. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 50 points at 10,055. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather staying very cold but dry for most through today. Some snow showers continuing for central and northern England and in the west of Scotland, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. I don't know how much telly you watched over Christmas. I think I popped up, I haven't watched it yet, on one of the royal ones that Dimbleby did. I don't know whether it was the coronation or perhaps the passing of the late Queen, but they sometimes take clips from this programme as almost sort of punctuation marks in historic documentaries. I'm not bigging myself up at all. I'm just telling you, it's a fact. It's quite a useful context sometimes to see. What you'd have done, I suppose, at some point is have a newspaper headline in a still image. But because we've got all these blooming cameras in the studio these days, I have become the substitute for the newspaper front pages. So you'll often have a clip from this studio of a little bit of commentary. Not just the news headlines, of course, which aren't filmed, but a little bit of a discussion. Sometimes they might even include you. Seriously, every now and then you'll get a phone-in element included in a historic documentary. Historical. Historic? Anyway, documentary. You'll get a little bit of phone-in included. So you could be preserved for posterity beyond even the magic of the LBC app or Global Player. If you're sitting there thinking as your New Year's resolution, do you know what? I might give that idiot on the radio a ring this year. I might set him straight about something. Then you could, of course, restore. You could claim your place in eternity, or at least digital eternity,
and end up in a Jonathan Dimbleby documentary, as I think I did over Christmas, but I haven't double-checked yet. And I mention that because where are we today, do you think? Where are we? I mean, glance at some of the front pages. Greenland attack would end NATO, says Denmark. In fact, the days when the Guardian and the Daily Mail, and if I have a New Year's resolution, it's probably going to be to depend less upon newspapers to decide what to talk to you about. But what are we going to depend upon instead? But the days when the Daily Mail and the Guardian essentially have the same front page are days that should be probably, circled on the calendar. They are possibly the days upon which we are most likely to have brief clips of our conversations preserved for posterity by their inclusion in television documentaries, because it means that unlikely planets are aligning. The list of prior... Anyway, you understand what I'm saying. Greenland raid will finish NATO, Trump is warned. Greenland attack would end NATO, says Denmark. Exactly the same story. And what's interesting and notable is that they are couched in very similar terms. Normally, the Daily Mail would provide you with a bonkers analysis of a story, and the Guardian would normally give you the relatively sensible, not always, but usually, the relatively sensible analysis. So, for example, with regard to moves back towards the single market that God knows everybody with a brain acknowledges we need to do as a country. Yesterday you'd have seen the Guardian report, closer ties to EU single market preferable to customs union, PM says. Sober, evidence-based, factual, opinion-free. The Daily Mail reports the same story. Starmer's new Brexit betrayal as he plots return to a single market. So you see what I mean. Two headlines, same story. One is bonkers, one is relatively calm and sane. We sadly, in Brexit Britain, still inhabit the land of the bonkers. So when both headlines in both newspapers are similarly sober, you take a moment reflect upon what that means. It means that there is an almost unanimous acknowledgement of the seriousness of the situation. Greenland raid will finish NATO, Trump is warned. Greenland attack would end NATO, says Denmark. And, of course, the difference between Greenland and Venezuela is that the Desperate Contortionists, which coincidentally was the name of my first band, the Desperate Contortionists in the UK media and political establishment will not be able to pretend that there are reasons to forgive or overlook the obvious breaches of our moral universe, our post-war settlement and international law in Trump's actions in Venezuela. Nobody's going to be able to write articles claiming that this is very necessary because drug dealers are awful. Please don't mention the one that he released last year type articles. Or, of course, we don't need international law because the really bad people who break international law. Therefore, the really good people who uphold international law should be breaking international law, as a columnist in the Times has attempted to do today. It means, and the reason I'm talking about documentaries and history is because what foothills are we in at the moment, do you think? And are we equipped, really, to process the possible profundity of the moment? You can see a headline, you can hear me say it. NATO will be finished. What does that do in your world? How many different perspectives can we conjure up together? What will they depend upon? I took some extraordinary calls yesterday. If I absolutely had to pick a favourite, it would probably be Michael in Greenwich, who spoke with authority and wisdom about the circumstances in which Donald Trump could annex Greenland.